go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the end of this momentous week. Sort of still walking with a little bit of extra air under my steps. But reality is also setting in. Welcome, any way you slice it, to this Friday, the 7th day of November edition of Head On. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid. And we've got 3 hours of conversation left in the work week here. Take advantage of it. Make the most of it. We'll have lots to cuss and discuss as we go through the evening. However, I'm going to start the evening off with a conversation that I set up earlier in the day. We have had some mention from on a couple of occasions here on the program about what it means for Rahm Emanuel to have been named Barack Obama's chief of staff. And there have been some sort of kind of queasy moments about that. And so I thought perhaps the best thing would be to go to somebody who has had a very close observational viewpoint on Congressman Emanuel. And on the line with us now, kindly taking time out of the beginning of his Friday evening, is the editor over at BuzzFlash, BuzzFlash.com, Mark Carlin. Hey, Mark, thanks for taking time to join us.
Hey, thanks so much, Bob. It's a pleasure and honor to always be on your wonderful program.
It's a joy for me as well, and especially because you do have you've kind of got a little bit different perspective than most of us out here in the hinterlands, wondering or having misgivings about Rahm Emanuel. And I was just hoping you would share with us what your thoughts are on his appointment.
We have an editor's blog up today, written by me this morning, about Rahm Emanuel on BuzzFlash.com, and your listeners can find it there. We know Chicago politics well and Illinois politics well, and what's emerging, of course, Barack Obama, is one of our first, in fact, since John F. Kennedy, the first president I can remember from an urban area. There really, when you look back, it has not been a president from a major city who's actually been a long-term resident of that city since John F. Kennedy was a resident of Boston. And so he has, and seems to be taking into his administration, his press secretary, Gibbs, is from Illinois. David Axelrod, who will be his kind of senior advisor without portfolio, is a long-term Illinois political operative and consultant. And, of course, Rahm Emanuel. There will be others, by the way, who will be appointed in one way or another from Illinois. But Rahm Emanuel probably is the big flashpoint appointment, as you mentioned, controversial on your show earlier. We do have a little bit different take, and we encourage people to read the editor's blog entitled Rahm Emanuel, You Can't Take a Knife to a Gunfight, live from Chicago. It's BuzzFlash.com. Rahm's a controversial figure. We've disagreed with him on BuzzFlash, as we note in the editor's blog, in terms of how he ran the House of Representatives campaign in 2006. He was opposed to Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, and we supported it. And Dean's 50-state strategy was vindicated in the Obama campaign. They had a 50-state strategy, and as a result, many states that were formerly red states were won by Obama, and he pulled along some senators and congressional people, state legislators in his coattails because of the 50-state strategy. So Rahm Emanuel was clearly wrong about that. Chuck Schumer, by the way, was just kind of on the Senate side, sided with Emanuel, and both of them were at odds with Howard Dean in 2006. There were reports that Schumer and Emanuel wouldn't even talk to Dean because they wanted to just concentrate money in the blue states. And he was wrong. He's also pretty much from the Democratic Leadership Council, which is one of the reasons I'm sure you've hit callers and listeners who
yes.
Don't cotton to Rahm Emanuel, and we oppose him on that. We think that Rahm Emanuel, I personally, and I've known him, and I have an anecdote in the editor's blog about when he called me to raise funds when he first ran for Congress, and I was on his fundraising list, as all politicians have, and it was an interesting little anecdote that ensued. But in any case, we certainly oppose on BuzzFlash the Democratic Leadership Council. And I think Rahm Emanuel is one of those people who does see this mythical center in America when America is really a country that is always in flux and always moving. There is no center in America. It's whatever a majority of voters decide as far as governmental policy, and that's constantly shifting. And Emanuel is basically a tactician. He's not a strategist. And Obama is a strategist. So we might feel a little bit differently if Emanuel was really in a public policy-making position. As chief of staff, he's really the chief administrator and enforcer.
It's that latter that I have been focusing on, the fact that he's he's going to be the point man for the administration in dealing with the Congress. I mean, do I have that right?
Yes, exactly right. And actually, that was pretty much his primary function under Clinton. He would round up the votes on Capitol Hill, and that was sort of his portfolio in the Clinton administration as long as he was there, and did a pretty good job of it for Clinton. He left to make a lot of money, which he did, which is another reason I think some people are uncomfortable with him. He made millions and millions of dollars as basically a rainmaker, trading in on his connections with the government in over a course of just 3 or 4 years before he ran for Congress. And he did that in Chicago with a firm in Chicago. But yes, I think Obama wants him because this is a guy who's not going to bring a knife to a gunfight, as Obama once famously said. In fact, as we say in our editorial, Rahm Emanuel will probably bring a bazooka. he was hired by Obama to make sure that when you have a recalcitrant Congress that already is John Boehner and Mitch McConnell trying to undercut Obama, and he's not even the president yet, he's president-elect, you're going to need someone who's going to blow off a few kneecaps on Capitol Hill in order to get legislation through. Otherwise, Obama's not going to be able to deliver on the economy, which, as he said in his press conference today, is his first priority, or on health care reform, on alternative energy, on an economic stimulus package that would benefit working people, which is a priority for him, as he said today. He won't be able to deliver any of that if the Republicans continue to obstruct any meaningful passage of legislation in Congress, which they have done pretty much the last 2 years. They've been the obstructionist party. And so I think he chose Emanuel because Emanuel is a guy who is a political hitman. He's going to get the job done, and he's going to, tell the Republicans, you don't play ball with us, and we're going to make it hurt. I mean, the Republicans are in a very bad position. They've lost two election cycles. I mean, if you look at 2006 and 2008, the Democrats have climbed from, like, I think 42 senators up to anywhere now. We still don't know the outcome of three races, but at least to 56 or 57. They've climbed back in the House from being a minority party to being a well-padded majority party at this time. So they've had two election cycles where they've gained significantly in both the House and the Senate. The Republicans are not in a very good position, and Rahm Emanuel has got to make sure they know that.
Well, if there's some, and that's the reason I'm willing to cut a little bit of slack here. If that is the function that he serves, you know, you mentioned the bazooka and kneecaps. I was thinking more in terms of a man who knows that a tire iron can be used for more than removing lug nuts.
That too. I mean, you know, no one is going to say that Rahm Emanuel is a warm and fuzzy guy. This is just not the case. He's, you know, known for four-letter word phone calls, for easily dispatching people he doesn't like politically to exile. And
is there a Clinton factor at play in this appointment as well, Mark?
I don't really think so. I mean, to the extent that Obama wants people who are experienced, remember Rahm Emanuel knows the White House. It's a very particular place. It's the seat of power for the strongest nation in the world. And in that sense, as I noted in the editorial I wrote this morning, editor's blog, I don't think that Rahm Emanuel represents what many progressives fear, which is a third Clinton term. I think that it represents Obama's practicality in ensuring that his vision can be carried out in a city where practical politics triumph one's idealism. So I think of Obama as the general, and I think of Emanuel as the person who carries out the general's orders. So I think that progressives have to cut Obama a little slack. He's not even the president yet. I mean, 4 days ago, we were worried about whether democracy was going to survive, and we were worried about whether our Constitution was going to survive. We were worried about being spied on as American citizens. We were worried about the possibility of a fascism taking over the government. We were worried that the election was going to be stolen. We were worried that a terrorist crisis might be created so Cheney and Bush can hold on to power. I mean, that was just 4 days ago as progressive.
Right, and now we're in the luxurious position of worrying about the China pattern.
Yeah, and to jump on one appointment, because Rahm Emanuel is not a progressive. He is a DLC type, but he's not in a policy-making position. I mean, it would be worse in a way, I think, in progressives might have more of a case to argue if he were appointed to a policymaking position.
Right.
He is really the chief administrator for the White House. That's not a policymaking position. No doubt he has influence.
Well, the other thing that comes to mind for me, Mark, is the fact that we must bear in mind that there's not a big talent pool of recent politicos from inside Democratic White Houses. I mean, if you want somebody who's got Democratic White House experience, you've got somebody, you're either looking for somebody from the Clinton administration or for somebody from the Carter administration. After that, it all dries up.
And remember, this is the person who is, in essence, the chief operating officer for the United States of America. You need someone who is disciplined and gets the job done. There, and I can't emphasize enough, I'm being a little redundant, but their job is not to make policy, but to carry out policy, to implement the policy of the president. And in many ways, I feel you have to overlook the fact that Emanuel's ideology is on the wrong side of the Democratic Party, as far as I'm concerned. But his skills at being an organized person, a person who can multitask, a person who is not going to be pushed over, a person who knows Congress and the White House, it's hard, as you say, Bob, to come by such a person. And I think you have to, as Obama probably did, look at those skills as being separate from his DLC roots.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Now, as you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, Mark, Emanuel, Gibbs, David Axelrod, these are all Illinois political machine guys to one extent or another. What does that mean for the Obama administration? I mean, is there any kind of generality that can be made out of that?
I don't think so. Obama was never really part of the so-called Chicago machine. Actually, the Chicago machine really doesn't exist anymore. You have Mayor Daley, and he really doesn't care about the rest of the state. He's sitting pretty in Chicago. He controls the city council because he's appointed most of the majority of the city council members now, but he doesn't. There's not really a Chicago machine like his father had that can swing an election, as the legend has it that the Illinois swung the votes for John F. Kennedy and got him elected president. There really isn't anything of that nature. It's more of a legend now. And Obama was never that closely associated with any faction, and there are several factions in the Democratic Party in Illinois, with any faction. He was really an independent from Hyde Park, which is akin to being from Ann Arbor or Berkeley or Madison in a lot of ways, or Cambridge, Massachusetts. You have to be an independent Democrat to be elected in Hyde Park in Chicago, includes the University of Chicago, his district. And you can't get you won't be elected if you are indeed associated with too closely with the remnants of the Chicago machine. But in fact, the machine endorsed candidates for the in state primaries recently in Illinois have not necessarily won. The precinct captains tend to now push purely Chicago candidates, and Obama was really never part of that. He was a state senator, and therefore the Daley really didn't have much to do with him. Now, it is true that some of the people around Obama have been in the Daley administration, but in administrative positions. Valerie Jarrett was head of the Chicago Transit Authority. She will probably come as an advisor to Obama in some capacity or as an appointed position. She's a close friend of both Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. David Axelrod is not any part of the machine. He's a consultant. He has been a consultant for Daley, but he started as a consultant for the late Senator Paul Simon. And
well, that, in my book, that speaks well.
Yeah, if you look at Obama, Dick Durbin, who is the assistant majority leader, and unfortunately, by the way, many of your listeners may not know because he's not a guy to make these sort of things very public, but just a few days ago lost his daughter, who was just 40 years old.
I read that. That was heartbreaking.
He's the assistant majority leader, and he's a very earnest, humble guy. I mean, I've been at events where I've walked in, and I remember one where he was there a little early. I was there a little early. He just was munching on some appetizers, and we started talking. I mean, he has no airs about him. He doesn't travel with an entourage. And he was really, Dick Durbin was really Obama's mentor. The senior senator from Illinois was the junior senator's mentor and encouraged him to run. He saw something in Obama, and he really said, look, if you run, I'll be the first one, you know, major figure to endorse you, and he was. Now, Durbin, I say all this because Durbin comes from, Durbin worked for Paul Simon. He was a protege of Paul Simon's. And when Paul Simon moved on to the Senate and Axelrod worked on that campaign, Dick Durbin ran for his Paul Simon's former congressional seat, which is in southern Illinois, by the way, and kind of unusual. People don't think of southern Illinois as being Democratic, but that was a Democratic seat at the time. And Durbin won that. He lives, his home is in Springfield, and his district then south from Springfield. Springfield is 200 miles south of Illinois. It's closer to St. Louis, about 100 miles from St. Louis. But I say all this not to digress. It's just that Obama is really more from the tradition of Paul Douglas, who preceded Paul Simon in Illinois, Dick Durbin, and then you have Obama. And even though he's a resident of Chicago, Obama is really more in that tradition, in the Adlai Stevenson tradition from Illinois. The fact he lives in Chicago made it easy for the McCain campaign to try to muddy him up by associating him with a now almost non-existent Chicago machine. But he's really had very little to do with it.
Well, Mark, let me ask you one more question about Rahm Emanuel. The chief of staff also has some impact on access to the president. Am I correct in that regard?
Yes, there's no question about that.
What does that mean for those who would advocate what you and I regard as meaningfully liberal, meaningfully progressive issues?
I think he's going to take his cues from the president. I think Obama is a brilliant guy. I mean, I've known him, and there's no one that disputes that. I mean, he was head of the Harvard Law Review, educated at Columbia, Harvard. He's a brilliant guy, and he is going to know if Emanuel is trying to screen people out based on ideology. I think Emanuel is a guy who likes to win more than anything else, and I think he sees that Obama is a winner, and so he is going to go with his cues from the President of the United States. He, you know, allegedly was a little hesitant at first to take this position because he had dreams of taking over the Speaker of the House once Nancy Pelosi retires. Not that that's in the offing, but
right, sure.
he's a young guy, and Nancy Pelosi is 67. At some point, she's going to step down. And so there, that was one thing. The other thing was he was for Hillary Clinton. He didn't declare in the primaries because everybody in Illinois of any prominence was for Obama. And he also knew Obama, and they got along. But he was a Clinton loyalist to the end, although there are some stories that Hillary Clinton didn't like him at first when he was in the White House. But he really was a Clinton loyalist. I mean, this guy's a very, very, Emanuel is a very, very loyal individual, and that's valued a lot in politics. And so in Chicago, when you read the papers and you heard the scuttlebutt during the primaries, Rahm Emanuel was kind of lying low because people knew he was for Hillary Clinton, but he wasn't going to come out officially for her because he wanted to hedge his bets, and also he didn't want to be the lone Democrat from Illinois who was a senior Democrat in the delegation who was not backing Obama. And so I think that's something also that Obama, when you mention the Clinton factor, actually in an ironic way, it shows that Obama is willing to take someone who is so closely associated with the Clintons, and particularly Bill Clinton, who's actually the one that I think Obama has the most tension with, not as much with Hillary, ironically, that he's willing to take someone so closely associated with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and make him the chief of staff. I think that's the kind of confidence Obama has in his own leadership that he doesn't see that as a threat.
Did I read some sort of breaking thing earlier today, Mark, about some remark that Rahm's father made? Did you catch that?
I didn't. What was it?
Maybe I just didn't check the dateline or something, but there was a story earlier today about some little flap brewing about someone speaking to his father and saying, will Obama be pro-Israel? And he said, of course, Rahm is pro-Israel. It's not like he's an Arab. He's not going to be scrubbing floors.
I don't know anything about
that. Well, like I said, I read it earlier today, and I was like, oh, no, not this.
That would surprise me. I mean, if he said it, I can't say he didn't say it. I just haven't read that. His father was born in Israel. Rahm was born in the United States and actually grew up in a suburb of Chicago and went to New Trier High School here, a noted high school in the suburbs. But I would be a bit surprised if his father said that. Although, again, I can't speak for his father, nor as Jesse Jackson Jr. taught us in the primaries, sons can't speak for their fathers. His father's not going to run the administration. On the other hand, that should quiet those who claim that Barack Obama was secretly Islamic, of which, as you might know, Bob, 15% of the American population thought that Barack Obama was.
I'm in West Virginia, Mark. It was a lot higher here.
Yeah, it was a lot higher in West Virginia.
That's why I've argued that on the day he's inaugurated, right after he takes the oath, he takes the Bible out of the Chief Justice's hands, holds it up to the crowd, and says, "Look, it's a Bible."
I think the appointment of Rahm Emanuel, it is true, he's very pro-Israel.
Well, his father served in the IDF.
He didn't actually serve in the Israeli Defense Forces. That's sort of inaccurate.
Oh, okay.
What he did was volunteer. He went over there for a brief period of time, and he volunteered. Israel has this program for foreigners who want to come and kind of serve as volunteers to assist the Israeli army, and I think he lubricated axles for trucks for the Israeli army, but as a volunteer.
Okay,
he was
so
never in the Israeli. That's sort of a rumor that's not accurate.
Well, and there's a difference between the two, because the IDF is a mandatory service thing, is it not?
For an Israeli citizen.
For an Israeli citizen, right?
I mean, you could go there as a person who's Jewish, and you could volunteer to be in the army, and they would probably take you. But usually, that's people who are immigrating to Israel, and that's sort of their way of showing that they are going to make a commitment to Israel by joining the armed forces. But Rahm Emanuel did not do that. He's a graduate of Sarah Lawrence College. I mean, he's very much an American, but he is very pro-Israel, and I would take that for what it's worth, but it certainly disproves all that McCain and right-wing nonsense that somehow he's, conspiring with Rashid Khalidi to have the Palestinians, overtake the Israeli state.
I don't think there's a politician in this country who could be anything but pro-Israel and expect to win the presidency.
I think, that is true again with, I think that, I think Obama is pretty much as he appears to be. And when he says he is in support of the state of Israel, I think he genuinely means that. And I think, however, that he will probably, and many Israelis, Haaretz, the newspaper there, which represents sort of a liberal newspaper, Labor Party, endorsed Obama, and they feel that Obama may be necessary if to make up for the lack of attention. If you recall, under the Bush administration, we had basically a benign neglect attitude toward the peace process in the Middle East.
And that worked really well.
Yeah, we saw, well, that worked. I think Obama is going to be more likely to get these Israelis and Palestinians, both sides, to say, look, this is not doing either of you any good. Let's get over this grudge match. You're both going to have to give up something. And, you know, let's get a peace that's going to work. There's been rumors that Israel has been secretly negotiating with the Syrians for some time, and is not that far from a peace agreement with Syria, pending some other changes in the region. And so I think that Obama will be more involved in actually facilitating a peace process in the way that Bill Clinton was. And so I think Rahm Emanuel, you know, puts an end to all those right-wing rumors about, you know, as we said, Obama being a secret Muslim or something of this nature. But, again, as far as what his father may or may not say, I don't think that's really relevant to, you know.
You know, I think I read it. I can't remember where I read it earlier today. But the first thing that came to my mind was just a sort of generic, oh, no, not already, not this. But we got to be ready for this stuff, Mark, because the one thing that the Republican Party does is slime and smear and create phony controversy. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Bill O'Reilly's already started the war on Christmas. So I didn't offer it in terms of reality, but rather more in terms of just, I'm astonished. You know, it's Friday after the Tuesday election, and
well,
here we go.
I think that, you know, as you say, I mean, I think you're exactly right. The Republicans, and particularly the shills in the media, I mean, you're in the media, and you're reaching a lot of people, but you got Rush Limbaugh's reaching several million. And I was listening this morning and heard that Rush Limbaugh was now completely reversing himself. And he was saying that the appointment of Rahm Emanuel would be an affront to Muslims and would make it harder to negotiate with the Islamic world. Now, here was a guy who was promoting Islamophobia and promoting that Obama was in cahoots with Rashid Khalidi and the radical Palestinians. And here was a guy who was saying that his middle name is Hussein, and, you know, we don't know the truth about his upbringing, whether he attended a madrasa in Indonesia and it was secretly a Muslim and so forth. As soon as he points Rahm Emanuel, suddenly Rush Limbaugh is concerned about our relationship with the Islamic world. I feel sometimes like I'm in The Exorcist and my brain is and face is just twirling around listening to these people because it's incomprehensible. They just take a position one day and very adamantly and in a very sleazy sort of way, and then they take a completely opposite position the next day. They have no compunction about doing that. And I'm sure that WorldNet Daily and Rush and...
Well, see, that's what I'm afraid. I'm sitting here sort of casting about as we talk, trying to find out where, because, you know, something like that doesn't just happen in my mind. The things that would cause that to happen in my mind, I stopped doing years and years and years ago in my misspent youth. But I did see it somewhere today, and I put nothing past these people. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you had that nasty little creature, Glenn Beck, declaring that, well, you know, a lot of us voted for McCain because we were hoping he'd die and we'd get Palin.
Yeah, and
these people are insane, Mark.
I heard that was one thing that I came across today in terms of, you know, various message boards and so forth. And actually, there were extremists on the religious right, leaders of some of these groups that we both get emails from, you know, who were saying exactly that, that, you know, McCain didn't have long to live, and they wouldn't say it officially, but their prayers were with Palin that she would be a good president if the need arose, and it might arise quickly. And this was all sort of coded language for hoping that McCain would have an early demise and Palin would assume power on behalf of God, because she really did a good job of covering up with the religious extremist that she is, and she's quite a religious extremist. She's part of a movement called the Third Wave.
Yes.
And she's part of a group that believes in what they call prayer. They're the prayer warriors, and they're engaged in spiritual warfare to establish a Christian nation in which the wealthy would rule, because being wealthy is a sign of being in God's good graces. And she's a good enough actor that she actually didn't reveal this. It did come out because some people on who do research, particularly of the Wasilla Assembly of God Church with which she was affiliated, had, you know, videotape of a lot of this. And there's a videotape of a woman named Mary Glazer, I believe, talking about how they found, in essence, Sarah Palin when she was 24 and decided that she was a person with the charisma to assume this role, to become a leader in government and be a spiritual warrior on behalf of God, and to seize the reins of governments on behalf of God, and to cast the non-believers, you know, out of the kingdom of God. And, you know, this sounds like such bizarre stuff that people say, oh, come on, you know, that's not really...
But it really, really is.
But it is true. And the odd thing is it's not only true, it's documented. You can watch it on YouTube. And so this is really scary stuff. But now when you ask me these questions about Rahm Emanuel, we're talking about, you know, again, 4 days from being on the brink of
disaster,
a complete descent into fascism, a complete denial of our constitutional democracy. Sarah Palin doesn't believe in constitutional democracy. First of all, she doesn't even know what's in the Constitution, but she believes that this is a Christian nation and that she is part of a leadership corps that is going to take over the government on behalf of a Christian God who's going to cast out the sinners. And this is all documented. I mean, again, it's not theory. She was very good at not discussing that and concealing that, but it's all there on videotape.
I got to ask you, and we're afield now, and I'm sure you need to go because it is the beginning of your Friday evening. But I got to ask you, Mark. I about had a fit the other day when I went over to the site and I saw a comment, a query or commentary, whatever we'll call it, asking could the whole Senator Stevens fiasco lead to Senator Palin? And I about kicked furniture. Is that a real possibility?
Yeah, one of our writers did research that, and actually that's not too much of a hypothetical possibility. Stevens may get kicked out of the Senate by Harry Reid and not allowed to serve while he appeals, because he is at this point a convicted felon. He does have the right to appeal. But if he does get tossed out of the Senate, he might just resign. I mean, he might appeal simply because he doesn't want to go to jail. But he might resign just because there'll be pressure on him, because Alaska won't have they'll only have one senator representing them if he's tossed out of the Senate while he's appealing. And if that's the case, then Sarah Palin seeking a national platform, because it is, you know, obviously for anyone up in Alaska, kind of hard to position yourself and still be governor of Alaska and travel into the lower 48 states, that she would appoint herself. A special election would then have to be held, but she would be odds on favor to win that, I think within 90 days. But she could appoint herself, yes. And that's not without... That's within the realms of possibility.
See, I was hoping you'd say, nah, Bob, we've looked into it, and that's completely impossible. And then I could just go to sleep peacefully tonight, and everything would be okay. But I got an ugly sister. I was, as of Tuesday night, Mark, I was thinking, you know, I may never have to say this woman's name again. But I don't think that's going to be the case. She's going to be like that proverbial bad penny. She's going to keep turning up. So, you know, the good work that you guys do and what we try to do in terms of getting the information that people need out to them, you know, we were out here talking about that religious reality that you were discussing, that's so crazy, so insane that you that couldn't possibly be true. But we made it abundantly clear that in fact it is. And you guys are doing the same sort of thing, and we really, really do appreciate it. And thanks for the insight on Rahm Emanuel, because questions were put on this program in the last couple of days saying, I'm not so sure, but I think you've cast it in a light that it can both be understood and even among the liberal progressive community tolerated.
Well, I think, you know, and I appreciate you giving me the time to talk about this. And again, people can read more on BuzzFlash about how we came to this, you know, viewpoint. But I do think that we, as progressives, have to take a breath and think how far we've come in a week, you know, from the darkest fears of the 8 years of nightmare not ending, but actually getting worse under a McCain administration. A man who was seeking war at every turn, and Palin, who is both ignorant and a religious, a closet religious fanatic. You know, we, many of us thought, as I said, and I'm sure you share this, that somehow this election was going to either be stolen or that racism would kick in and Obama couldn't get far enough ahead that they couldn't steal it. But democracy triumphed, and there was this feeling of elation on Tuesday night and Wednesday. And here we are on Friday, and people are already, you know, kicking Obama. Frankly, as you said at the beginning of the show, I'm still a bit euphoric about this. And progressives love to talk about nuance and subtlety, but we just saved the Constitution. We just saved democracy. We just saved the Supreme Court, which was one vote away from becoming a court that was going to overturn the Constitution. It's made some bad decisions when Kennedy has swung with the majority, particularly when they stole the election in 2000 from Gore. But it was one vote away from really becoming a right-wing junta Supreme Court, because at least Kennedy was swinging sometimes to the other side, to our side. And we saved the federal judiciary, which was becoming just a federalist society sort of backbench to protect the Republican Party. That's quite an achievement in the course of just a few days in one election. And I think we should just give President-elect Obama little breathing room before we start jumping down his back, because our nation has just been saved. Now, we aren't always going to get everything we want, and it's not going to, government is never going to be ideal, and even among progressives, we have different opinions upon some things. But the essential core of what we fought for 8 years, and I started Buzzflash in May of 2000, and since the stolen election of 2000, what we have fought for as a society and as progressive, which was to preserve our Constitution and to preserve our individual liberties, we find ourselves now almost with still in a bit of disbelief that we have managed to triumph and to return our society to a constitutional democracy from the precipice of fascism. And that is no small accomplishment, to say the least. And I think we can just set aside some time, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up, to be thankful for this achievement, which every one of us has been involved with who helped make this happen, and give some slack to Obama.
Yeah, I've made much a very much similar argument that we've got to let the man get his feet under him first. But the difference being that where we merely held the gates against the barbarians for 8 years, now we can finally start rebuilding the city and rebuilding the country. And that's where the grassroots activism is going to be a joy now, as opposed to a desperate struggle. And you guys at Buzzflash were a huge part of the good that happened during this election cycle, and I really appreciate it, Mark. And I look forward to more conversations with you as this administration takes shape.
Bob, I look much forward to talking with you again, and you know, reaching your listenership. And you know, Buzzflash is very proud of the work you're doing. This was a collective effort. We've been here plugging away 8.5 years, but we've been part of a community of people who are the patriots. And just to close, as I sent a recent editorial blog about this nonsense that the McCain campaign and Sarah Palin were promoting of a real America versus, you know, an America that wasn't real, that the real America is a concept embodied in our Constitution, the rule of law, the right to freely associate, the right to privacy. And it's in a concept that we all assume as an adopted identity as Americans. Except for Native Americans, we're all immigrants to America. The real America is the Declaration of Independence. The real America is the Bill of Rights. And that is the real America. And we have seen that trampled upon. But in the last 8 years, we saw it trampled upon in the McCain campaign. And I am just thankful that a majority of Americans last Tuesday had the good sense, in large part due to the community of patriots that held together steadfastly and tenaciously in this 8-year nightmare, that that true America, that real America, that's the concept that makes this country such a unique nation in the world, that it triumphed. And I look forward to administration where we can agree to disagree as a progressive community, but we can also be thankful that we won an enormous victory, not just for ourselves, but for the world. And I think we're seeing that in the glee in which the world has received the results of Barack Obama being elected president.
It's the entire world taking a deep sigh of relief. Mark Carlin, thank you very kindly. And everybody, keep track of what Mark's thinking over at the editor's blog at buzzflash.com. I wish you a very good weekend, Mark.
And you too. And let's take a deep breath and celebrate. Thanks so much, Bob, for what you do.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Again, Mark Carlin, the editor of buzzflash.com. And, I thought you guys would get a good bit out of that conversation simply because the Rahm Emanuel issue has come up a couple of times. And there were people that had pause about it. But in the way that Mark describes it, it makes abundant sense. the idea of because truly, where are you going to get your guys with White House experience when the only people to hold the White House were the Clintons? The Clintons, please. Oh, Bob, stop it. Daggummit. Was Bill Clinton from 1993 to January 2001. That's the talent pool. That's it. And we've got to realize that Washington is a nepotistic and incestuous place. And anybody who comes in there, well, look, George Bush came in and said, you know, we're going to change the tone in Washington. And we're going to be compassionate conservatives and not just we're bringing in our own people. Well, some of that happened, but then it turned out that the vast majority of what George Bush brought into Washington was just a bunch of the same old filthy, bloodthirsty, warmongering, flesh-eating, undead monsters that have been creeping and crawling around the nooks and crannies of official Washington since the Nixon administration. So there is an element in either political party. Sorry, I mean, it just is. There's an element of Washington to any administration, because where politics is concerned, unless you've been there since God was a baby, then there's an element to knowing how it works. I mean, I'm old enough that I do remember Jimmy Carter going into Washington, and he actually tried to start with all outsiders in many ways, and that just blew up in his face. And the next thing you know, the cocktail party circus talking. Oh, could you believe it? He was serving them little cocktail weenies in barbecue sauce at a high tea. Oh, they're just Philistines, them people from Plains, Georgia. Honest to goodness, my stars. That's how it works. So I'm okay with this. I'm okay. After hearing Mark Carlin, I'm okay with this. And, you know, it's worth remembering that you can't, you know, everything doesn't happen all at once, and we have to watch some of this stuff develop. And as such, we've got to show a little bit of patience. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, welcome back. All righty. 2 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast, this Friday evening edition of Head On. And we will go straight away to the phones, one of those unusual moments when I actually got to find out who's on the phone. We've got Juanita with us. Hey, Juanita, welcome to the program.
Hey. thank you for having the guy from BuzzFlash on.
Oh, it was my pleasure, my pleasure.
It's been my newspaper for lo these many years.
Oh, I know.
Because you go on there, and of course it is, you know, it's a liberal site. But when you go to the different news stories, you know, you get the straight news.
Well, they've got, you know, they've got some good writers there, and there's always some the little link headlines are always cute and catchy and a little bit snarky sometimes, and you get a little giggle out of it here and there.
But when you go to the, you know, you get.
Yeah, it's
the real story.
Exactly, it's the straight up news item.
Right. Uh huh.
And as opposed to say the folks at the American Family Association who edit their news items to, for instance, turn a track star into from Tyson gay into Tyson homosexual. Yeah, that's one of the nice things. It is the real news.
Okay. I wanted to say something about the amount of votes.
Mm hmm.
You know, not the regular votes.
Right.
You know, it's close to 8 million now, difference.
Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't.
Well, the last I did was at 7,973,932, and things keep going up. And
remember, Juanita, that is not a mandate.
What is a mandate?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, they asked Bob Novak on some of why anybody would be talking to that deranged old freak anymore. I don't know. But somebody asked him, and no, that's not a mandate. He's got a rule from the center right.
Well, it's also 53% to 46%.
I know. That's just a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a stomping. Yeah. That's a stomping.
Yeah, I mean, the other day, I mean, like yesterday, it was almost 7.5, but it's already gone, it's gone up today. In fact, I might go back in and it might be closer date now because I was going to call you and I kept getting the numbers and I thought, well, I'll just see if it's gone up. And sure enough, it'd be going up.
And, you know, it'd be fine if it went up 15 or 20 as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, that's a little bit of happy news.
Yeah, that was great. That's a lot. That's a country. But
that is a country.
Yeah, that's like...
that's 8 West Virginias.
12, how would you do it? 122-something million people voted. That's probably most of the people, isn't it?
Well, we're roughly 300 million. I would hazard a guess, although it's not a certainty. I would hazard a guess that that's probably going to wind up being the highest percentage turnout of voters in modern American history.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because it's been pathetic in the past, really.
There have been elections like that. Well, and the elections with the Republican skullduggery, to this day we don't know what the real vote count was from 2004 or 2000.
No, tell me about 2000. Yeah, that was a nightmare that never went away.
Well,
so
you know,
hopefully.
You know, in the last few days, Juanita, I have done a lot of thinking about what 2000 and 2004 mean. And by that, it's sort of, you know, armchair quarterbacking or whatever you want to call it. But what would we be doing right now if Al Gore had won the presidency in 2000?
Well, I think that...
Would they have run George Bush against him again in 2004, or would they have run McCain?
You would have got a lot of these people that, you know, thought that Bush was the Messiah, or next to that.
Yeah.
You know, and they would have said, oh, if only we'd have had him, it would have been so much better. Even though, you know, so I don't know. I know some of them don't feel that way now, but there's still a lot of people thinks he's it.
I know.
And so I think that.
Well, it's that usual weirdo, that weirdo 20% factor. Those are the ones, you know, but again, that's the same bunch that if he was caught drowning children, they'd swear it was a baptizing.
Yeah, they, I heard today that a lot of these gun people that they're buying firearms because they think the Democrats are going to take their guns.
I saw that today. And it's so funny because it says, you know, there were 108,000 more applications for background checks. Look at that. We have background checks for firearms for 8 years under George Bush. And everybody's pretty much still getting guns at will. Background checks. And they swore, the National Republican Rifle Association swore that background checks would be the absolute end, Juanita, of the Second Amendment in America. So maybe one of the things that we're learning is that the hysteria and the hyperbole of the right is exactly that, hysteria and hyperbole.
You know, I know it did with me. I mean, with people like me and you, it got tiresome from the beginning. But other people, I've gotten tired of that gradually.
Yeah, did you? Now, I don't know which gun sale story you saw. I saw an Associated Press story, Juanita. And it was datelined Midlothian, Virginia. And the opening paragraph says, and it, you know, it's one of those moments, Sue in the chat room sent this along to me, one of those moments where you just go, you know, and you can hear the marbles rattling between your ears.
Yeah.
The opening paragraph said, when 10-year-old, Michael and Jen are with us in the studio again tonight. Say hi to Juanita, guys.
Hey, Juanita.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, y'all. This is going to just make him scream. When 10-year-old Austin Smith heard Barack Obama had been elected president, he had one question. Does this mean I won't get a new gun for Christmas? I want to live in a country where 10-year-olds want a new bicycle for Christmas. Mommy, does this mean I don't get the grenade launcher now? Oh, my Lord.
Oh, boy.
So, 108,000 more background checks for gun purchases than in October 2007.
Yeah, I think I just read a headline somewhere.
Oh, this is, I couldn't believe it, a 10-year-old.
I want me.
Yeah.
But look, that's the reality where you are, and it's the reality where I am.
Yeah.
Little children get deadly firearms. So, let's see, little 10-year-old Austin Smith's mommy was in the gun store shopping for just the right 20-gauge shotgun for the 10-year-old. Oh, my aching back. I mean, can't we start with the cap guns, the pop guns, the cork guns? Can't we? Paintball even? Well, no, that makes a real mess on my floor.
That's how I learned to shoot was BB pistol.
Well, sure.
Go out and shoot flies.
We were very, very irresponsible. When I was a young boy, probably 12 or so, we were all very, very irresponsible with our BB guns.
It's easy to do that.
Usually like during spring break when it's still cool outside, a little bit of damp down that way where I was raised, put on two or three layers, a couple of layers of thermal underwear and maybe an old fatigue shirt from the Army surplus and go out and have BB gun war.
Oh.
And we always, but we were smart little kids. We wore, glasses and stuff that, would shatter the glasses and our parents would kick our butts for the, but we'd shoot at each other with the BB guns.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky to be here.
Yeah.
I really am. I'm a series of unfortunate accidents that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But a 20-gauge shotgun, Juanita?
I know.
I mean, my favorite book is To Kill a Mockingbird, and there's a, well, just don't, and Jim gets his BB gun. Just don't shoot a mockingbird, son. don't knock off the liquor store, kid. 10-year-old Austin Smith with a 20-gauge.
Well, my daddy never had a gun. I'm sure he could shoot one, but he never had one.
Well, I can shoot him.
Of any kind.
I can field strip him. This is West Virginia. You're not allowed to live here for very long unless you can, work with a firearm.
Yeah.
But in this story, it says that she's got five children ages 4 to 10, and she's already taught all five of them to shoot.
Yeah.
Now, see, Juanita.
4 years old.
If you're putting a firearm in the hand of a four, you remember the fit that they threw when they were trying to sleaze Barack Obama? He wants to teach the first graders about the Homer sectionals. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
But it's okay to put a working firearm in the hands of a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Golly, Moses.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's astonishing is what it is.
Talking about the gays, they had an interesting discussion on The View today about that law in California.
Yeah, Proposition Hate.
Yeah. And, Whoopi, we were talking about them using fear to get people to vote that didn't acquiesce to it right away.
Right.
Whoopi said something I hadn't thought about. Maybe you have, but she said that a lot of it was that they told their people that their pastors would be sued if
yes.
they refused to marry a gay couple.
Which is, of course, a blatant lie.
And she said that also that they would be taught in school about gay marriage. And, it's just stuff like that, it's just
I made it all the way through the school system without being taught about heterosexual marriage. There was never a class on picking a china pattern.
Yeah.
There was never a class on which script to use in having one's towels embroidered. What's the difference?
You know what, I thought about that verse where it says, "Come unto me, all ye who are labor
and are heavy laden."
Heavy laden.
Yes.
And I will give you rest, except the gaze.
Yeah, it says that. It does. It's one of those things where you have to use the secret right wing decoder ring.
Right.
And you have to put it over that Bible verse. There's all kinds of them. Like, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever believeth in him might have everlasting life. And then you put the secret right-wing decoder ring on it. It says, accept the gaze.
Right.
It's all over the Bible.
Yeah.
But you can only get the secret decoder ring, at your local Mormon temple, or from a member of the Knights of Columbus.
Well, you were the one talking about the Mormons giving so much money, right?
Right.
And I think some of them are going to take them to task. They may get sued about that.
I sincerely hope that they are. I'd just like to see them bankrupted.
It doesn't, you know, that doesn't have a thing in the world to do with Jesus, Yeshua, you know.
No, it doesn't, and I'm not trying to offend anybody's faith or anything, but you have to understand a little bit about the culture in which he lived. In that culture, a young Jewish man who was working hard at being a rabbi, to be unmarried at the age of 30 was not only weird, but downright socially unacceptable.
Well, that's the way it is in a lot of the Protestant churches, too.
And, you know, it would have made people kind of go, you know, he's a confirmed bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I know that's true in a lot of the...
So what does that say for a guy who's 30 years old and running around with 12 guys?
Yeah.
I mean, no. If you think, no wonder they kind of looked askance at him. Where's the wife?
Yeah, could be, yeah.
Of course, there's a lot of argument that Mary Magdalene was fulfilling that role.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, she did more than she bankrolled the operation.
Mm-hmm.
From her house in, what was it, Capernaum, Juanita? Was
well, that? they had women with them, too.
Some did, yes.
With them.
Absolutely.
That'd be another thing that would be shocking. Be like hippies.
Well, that's why the Christ consciousness movement took such root among the hippies of that day.
Yeah. Some of them are really tragic too. But that's the screwiness of this world.
I know.
And you said that what's his name's declaring war on Christmas again?
Oh, yeah, Bill O'Reilly. He's even offering a free bumper sticker if you order his book.
You know what gets me? Now, last year, every time you saw Bush, and every time you saw Laura even, it was happy holidays. Happy holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And
I won't say Merry Christmas until they start leaving us alone about it.
You know, it's just, that's ridiculous. Christmas is not really based on a lot on, not especially the way it's celebrated now, the Christmas tree. That's a Teutonic symbol.
Sure it is.
A lot of those things, you know, that are not.
And the Easter Bunny goes back to the old Eastern fertility religions.
Easter, yeah, right.
Astarte,
right.
Ishtar. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And, Esther. Same name. Yeah.
And that's ridiculous to say if you don't say Merry Christmas.
Well, right now, right now, Juanita, for a limited time only, if you order Bill O'Reilly's book, you'll get a bumper sticker that says, "We say Merry Christmas."
I don't want any of his books in my house.
And what's it? And I wouldn't have them in the same county with me that I know of. On either side of "We Say Merry Christmas" is the fleur-de-lis. You know, that classic sort of stylized representation of a flower that is
in
the...
France.
Yeah, in France, exactly. Yeah. That symbol. It says, "We say Merry Christmas," and there's a fleur-de-lis on either side. And I just got one question for the War on Christmas crowd. I have put up, in my 45 years on the planet, Juanita, I've put up or participated in putting up a pretty good handful of Christmas trees. And I've sent out my fair share of Christmas cards and gone carol singing and all kinds of stuff. And never once have I ever seen the fleur-de-lis, the symbol of the royal house of, Eugene Finneran can help me with this, either the House of Bourbon or the House of Valois or one of those gangs. Never have I seen the fleur-de-lis used as a Christmas decoration.
Well, what is the significance of that? I mean, what's it got to do with Christmas? I don't know.
I don't either, but it's sitting there on Bill O'Reilly's bumper sticker that says, "We say Merry Christmas."
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that. Have you ever heard his reading of one of his novels?
I mean,
About the young girl?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, Randy Rhoads used to play it a lot, and
you mean that tawdry piece of okay
about the bath and all like that.
Yeah,
falafel, another falafel story.
No, it's not a piece of falafel. I know falafel when I see it. It's a delicious Middle Eastern snack, especially when dipped in dill flavored yogurt sauce.
Well, he does say Lufthansa one
right
part, and then he gets confused.
Well, that's because he'd been into his Merry Christmas eggnog at this time.
But that is the most ridiculous thing. him and that John Gibson, I think John Gibson wrote a book about it, too.
Oh, John Gibson did write a book about it.
And, I used to watch him. I used to see him during OJ trial. I'm one of those people that watched the whole trial.
Oh, you poor thing.
Lord. And
where is it, Mr. Fong? I remember that.
He never did. I never thought John Gibson was that much of a creep until he got on the right wing TV show.
But it's gotten so bad with O'Reilly that his own colleagues are mocking him and Hannity now.
Oh, good. Hannity, especially.
Yeah, Shepard Smith
Hannity, to me, is the worst one.
Oh, he is. But Shepard Smith was needling Hannity and O'Reilly today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, let's see. O'Reilly had him on the show last night, and he said, and Shepard Smith said that a real journalist who holds truth dear has to fight against the dangerous lies told during a campaign. And O'Reilly said, okay. But you work for the Fox News Channel, which is the most unfair channel and is always trying to get the Republicans elected. So you can't be doing this stuff. You can't be challenging Joe the Plumber and Ralph Nader. And then Shepard Smith said, yeah, that's Sean Hannity's job.
Sean Hannity, I don't know.
It's the only moment of truth that Flush Flimball ever had when he said of Bill O'Reilly, somebody's got to say it. The guy is Ted Baxter.
Is what?
Ted Baxter.
Oh, yeah.
Mary, remember? Yeah. Well, Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Oh, not as nice.
Yeah, that's true. You have a great weekend, all right?
You too.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Until Juanita mentioned it, I had completely forgotten about the secret right-wing fundamentalist decoder ring. And except for gays. Yeah, that's how that works. Hey, welcome to the program, Luke.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm fine. You were talking a minute ago about the proposition hate.
Yes.
You know what I think? At the next election, if I was them, I'd get together and let's put together a proposition to outlaw heterosexual marriage.
I've thought about that. How about, but you want to really stick them? How about a proposition outlawing divorce? And the thing is, where with gay marriage, you can't find anything in the words of Jesus Christ about that, but he's real clear about divorce and the fact that he didn't like it. Send you right to the barbecue pit.
But it's one of those things, you almost wish they'd do it at the next mid-year election, the 2 years. Just to really stick it to them. It's like that article where, you were talking about can't remember what his name was. The one that has Tourette's.
Amundsen.
And the thing was, he was the third. He wasn't the largest donator. The second one was the lady whose son owns Blackwater.
Right. What's her name? Blitzkrieg or something? The mother of Eric Prince?
Yeah. And who was the first one? I guess it was just essentially the Mormon Church. And I say, you got to wonder how much out there they actually told people what was going on. I mean, essentially, just the Amundsen. I mean, you're sitting there going, you know, this guy, from everything I've read about him, he needs to be put away.
Yeah, he's a little at this point, needs the jacket with the buckles up the back. And the thing is, he's been he's one of those profiles in somebody called Dr. Freud 50 years ago. Because his father was the guy who founded irony of ironies, Washington Mutual.
Oh God.
And he dropped dead and his mom dropped dead. Or he dropped dead and his wife dropped dead, which left the little and the Amundsen kid was just all screwed up from to begin with because he'd sort of been ignored his entire childhood. And there he's sitting with $118 million or something like that. And pretty quick, he sold off all of his Washington Mutual stock and started putting it into real estate in Southern California.
And poor fella.
Yeah, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And then he meets R.J. Rush Dooney, and all of a sudden it's he lives his entire existence inside the fun house with all the funny-looking mirrors.
Yeah. Well, I saw the news today that Senator Byrd stepped down.
Yeah, I saw that too, Luke, and you know how I am. I see things at an odd angle. Maybe it's my glasses.
Well, I was gonna say, well, from where you are, you have a different view on that. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I'll never forgive Robert Byrd for what he did to us with Samuel Alito and that stupid line of hokum BS about how he'd received a bunch of letters with donut sugar stains and coffee stain circles on them from people talking around the coffee table about how we need to yada yada yada. That was all just a big old honking lie, is what that was. But what I find interesting in this, however, is that if I understand the article from the Politico correctly, what happened is that some feelers were put out earlier, sort of telling Byrd that if he didn't jump, he would be pushed.
It made it sound like they essentially said, you know, we like you, but if you don't step down, we're going to help you down.
Yeah. And so what sort of grabbed me and
talking was, it sounded like that a bunch of the junior members had essentially been running some of the stuff any which way.
Oh yeah. And you know, the young guy, Daniel Inouye, 84.
84.
Yeah, he wants to run it for a while.
Oh God.
So, you know, our days of the Robert C. Byrd this and the Robert C. Byrd that are apparently pretty much over, although they'll throw him, you know, they'll throw him a bone every now and then.
He'll stay on that committee.
Yeah, he's just giving up the chairmanship.
Then it's for emeritus, I guess, just sort of, you know.
But I want you to think about something for a minute, Luke.
Yeah.
Here's Harry Reid participating in pushing Robert Byrd out of his Senate chair. Now, let's for a minute put aside all the negatives that I have for him, because there are a lot of positives.
Yeah.
But Harry Reid's got time to shove Robert Byrd, a real honest-to-God Democrat, who really did bust his ass to get Obama elected. He's got the time to shove Byrd out, but he can't make a definitive statement about Joe Lieberman. That's the part where I kicked the furniture.
It's like I said, you know, that's what we were talking about the other night. I said I'm glad in a way they didn't make 60, because if they'd made 60, they'd have had to hold on to Joe. You know, because you had to have Joe to get that magic number 60. And if they're going to be a couple numbers short, well, now we can say, Joe, see those people that are called Republicans? Go talk to them.
That's what you're one of now.
Yeah. Said, you know, we'll take Bernie. Bernie's a Democrat. You know, he may not say he's a Democrat, but we take Bernie. We don't take you. You know, you say you're an independent. But, oh, yeah, sure.
No, you... You enjoy a minority seat and a minority vote on the senatorial wrapping paper committee.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's his own thing, because whatever we heard, you know, they said before the RNC convention, you know, they said that, you know, we understand, Joe, that John McCain's your friend, and that's okay. You know, we understand you want to help your friend. but you don't disparage Obama. That's all his speech was.
Oh, it was a sleaze fest.
Oh yeah, I mean his speech. You know, if he sit there and extolled the virtues of John McCain, okay, I could have lived with that. You know, because they're friends, and that, you know, I understand that. But like I say, he didn't do that. He went dead at Barack Obama. You know, like you said, that was just a sleaze fest that came out of him. But have you seen? You've heard what the two good things, not good things, but the two things coming out of Fox Noise that just absolutely blow my mind lately. Is number one, McCain lost because of the evil liberal media were against him.
Yep, I know.
You know, that's the new one. And the other one is this new Republican attack of, well, you know, Barack Obama was elected as a moderate centrist. Wait a minute. Now, last week he was a socialist.
He was a card carrying friend of Lenin last week, and now he's center right.
The one Boehner said where he ran as a Reagan Republican. I'm sitting there going, does that mean Reagan's a socialist?
I know. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? I'm just waiting for the time when they get all South Park and their head just goes, you know, and it's over.
But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. You're just sitting there going, you know, if I try following this, I'm going to have whiplash. I'm sorry. This is too much.
It's making my brain hurt.
This is a 360 turn.
And, you know, I guess it was it Karl Rove that said that Barack Obama hoodwinked the American people? I saw that word hoodwink.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went, and I double checked on the definition. And yeah, I was right. The old meaning of hoodwink is to put a hood over someone's head, as in preparation for a kidnapping or, of course, a lynching. Karl Rove and these Republicans cannot, for their miserable souls, stay away from the eliminationist rhetoric. I mean, they are drawn to it like a dog to his own, you know.
Well, the thing was, and it's going to be fun to watch, is like I say, you know, I heard the comment the other day from, I hope I can say his name right, I always never do, the governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he actually sounds like a reasonable person. And I'm just wondering when the right wing is just absolutely going to drop the hammer on him. You know, because he was sounding, you know, we can work and all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there going, I said, I know you're friends with some of them, but I tell you what, they're sitting in there looking at you going, you got to get right with the world, son.
Oh, I know.
So, yeah.
And it's right up there. It's right up there with, the announcement from, the Prime Minister of Italy.
Oh, God.
You saw this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Silvio Berlusconi. And I think Silvio Berlusconi is Italian for I've got one foot in my mouth, and you're going to be amazed how I get the other one in there with it. Yeah, he announced that he had called and congratulated Barack Obama and told him that he looks young, handsome, and even tanned.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know how it is. It's like he's
Father Guido Sarducci's first cousin or something.
I mean, he looks for, you know, you get a wonder if people are sitting there looking around, what can I really screw up this week? You know, but did you see the fun news about Fox News?
Which?
News Corp?
No.
Where they dropped 30 points or 30% this year? that they lost like 30% in their ad revenues and all this stuff, you know. That Rupert was just a really happy person about that. Somebody said, I bet you won't be seeing this on the Fox Business News.
No, I got a feeling you won't. And frankly, I'm wondering, I don't, because I'm careful now, having watched here in just the span of four short days, having watched Obama do the Jedi mind trick on the world, that really, my new nickname for him is Obama Wan Kenobi. My gut level says, you know, it would suit me fine if he didn't send anybody on Chris Wallace's stupid little show or any of the other stupid little Fox shows for about the next 3 years. Unfortunately, I think they'll have more class than me.
Oh, they will. You know, it's one of those things, but you just got to wonder who they're going to send, you know? You just got to think that he's probably hunting around, you know. You got to think Emmanuel's going to go. And Emmanuel, he don't suffer fools lightly. You know, like I said.
Now, they may have to, they may, if I understand correctly about Rahm Emanuel, they may actually have to use the dump button on Chris Wallace's show if it runs live.
Oh, yeah. For what they understand, he does not suffer fools gladly. You know, somebody there starts spouting, you know, a Hannity type line, he'll essentially look at him, you know, and essentially tell him what he thinks of him.
Listen, asshat. Yeah, I know.
But
and I'm looking forward to that day. I really am.
It's been fun the last couple of nights. Every once in a while, I'll switch over and listen to Hannity, and I've listened to O'Reilly, and I'm just waiting to see if Bellows' head explodes. I really think it's going to happen.
Oh, I think
if Al wins the recount.
Oh, I know. I think Hannity's going to have an exorcist moment, like what Mark Carlin was talking about. The head's going to go all the way around, and he's going to, you know.
Oh, did you see the article I sent you about the thing up in Minnesota about the guy doing the translating?
Oh, yeah. I've been following that for a couple of days now, and it just keeps getting realer.
And, I mean, you know, the thing is, it's like I'm waiting for it to show up on national news. You know what I mean? That article I sent you is from, like, a Creative Loafing type magazine, I guess. You know what I mean? Sort of on the fringes. And it's like, isn't it amazing how you find out that some of the translators up there were telling the people to vote for Norm Goldman?
Yeah, I know. But no. It's getting legitimacy. I mean, it's been picked up by the so-called, we know what we call it. It's the for-profit. The for-profit media has picked this up. And Norm Coleman acknowledges that this person was on his staff. I mean, everybody's saying, yeah, the guy, this person was there and doing what, yeah.
You know, that's going to be interesting. And the one that sort of caught me off guard was, I did not realize until I heard it the other day, that apparently the voting numbers were down in Alaska. I'm sitting there going, no, something's wrong. We got.
Well, there's a couple of places in Alaska where if somebody doesn't show up to vote, there's no precinct.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. That's just beyond belief. You know what? It's like, say, that's something you're sitting there going, Attorney General, please let's talk about. Oh, before I forget, they've been, you know, who's the winners and the losers this week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My nominee for loser of the week, Elliot Spitzer. Even though he got you know, found out he was not going to be indicted, just think, this is Elliot Spitzer, who, if he had not got into trouble, would probably be one of the lead people being considered for Attorney General right now.
Yeah, you'd almost have to, wouldn't you?
Uh-huh.
Which makes me wonder if Andrew Cuomo's under consideration.
I don't know who it's going to. Somebody said they ought to. Don't know. Said Patrick Fitzgerald might be a choice.
Nah, too much of a partisan.
I know, but he'll be, you know, he'll be somebody to float up there. How about the guy from the U.S. attorney that was fired, the one that was out of Arizona, was it?
New Mexico, David Iglesias.
Yeah, he'd be somebody good. Let's put him up there. I bet he'd be a real fun one.
Yeah, but he was a good Republican partisan all along.
But
that's the funny thing about these people. They were purging their own. It's not like they were purging, you know, some sort of wild-eyed liberal Democrats who wanted to send real criminals to prison and wasn't adequately.
No.
Well, that's what it was. Wasn't it? Weren't adequately tormenting the poor.
You know, he'd be a good attorney general, but he probably never really wanted. I don't know if he's got the qualifications, I'm afraid. Henry Waxman.
Too old.
I know, but it'd be fun.
Yeah, it would. What I find interesting is this hissy that's being had, Luke, about RFK Jr.
Oh.
Because, I mean, there are so-called liberals and there are so-called Democrats out there going, oh, it'd be just like George Bush going to war on science, all over the fact that RFK Jr. has cast doubt on the thimerosal-processed, mercury-laced vaccines. I got no problem with that.
No. I mean, it's like, say, if that, to me, that's a good choice. I'd just soon have him as EPA head. You know, I mean, I think Obama's going to pick some choices that some people are going to go, huh? But actually, there are going to be some pretty good choices down the road. You know what I mean? Because I think he's going to. I would not be surprised if he does not pick Chuck Hagel for Defense Secretary.
I wouldn't either, although I saw another balloon floated today, a congressman who just retired from the 5th District in Alabama, Bud Kramer.
Okay.
The fact that, you know, and he's a Democrat, but he's the bluest of blue dogs.
Well, yeah. But you know what I mean? There's some good choices out there that it's going to be fun to watch the Republicans just have to turn themselves into pretzels.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I'm looking,
I'm looking forward to it. I'm keeping you too long.
Oh, no, no, no. You haven't kept me too long at all. It's always cool hearing from you, Luke. And have yourself a great weekend. Wait a minute. Big game with Wyoming this weekend?
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see how all this works out. I'll tell you what. Only thing I got to say is next year, if they don't have an absolute winner, I want every sportscaster in this town fired.
Oh, for running Phil?
Oh, because, I mean, you've had people here that in 99, after the year after they won the national championship, were wanting his job because he didn't win two in a row.
Yeah, that's a little stupid.
I mean, but, yeah, I mean, you've had people here for 10 years been doing this. I mean, there's two or three.
Yeah, but hasn't he slid a little bit? I mean.
Yeah, he has. But you know what I mean? It's like saying you just changed your coordinator. You've got a freshman quarterback. I mean, the kid they had in Compton, who was the senior, he, you know, a nice one standing on the sidelines holding the clipboard. You know what I mean? He was a good high school quarterback, but it was not a top notch quarterback
right.
in college.
But everything I saw, everything that I read, and I do read this stuff, everything I read seemed to point toward recruiting issues. And I couldn't help looking at Phil Fulmer and sort of with the change in clothing, couldn't help feeling like I was looking at Don Nealon.
I know. You know, it's one of those things, though. Phil has always been a really good recruiter. You know, I mean, that's been one of his strengths.
But but now it's not happening.
I know. So we'll wait and see. I mean, we knew that this was coming someday. You know what I mean? I just hate the way it was sort of forced on him. You know what I mean? Because I tell you what. A bunch of the players are thick.
I'm understanding the players were hot.
Oh, yeah. There's some, you know what I mean? We've got probably a kid who, if things were different right now, would probably be, maybe not this year, probably next year would be a Heisman hopeful in a fellow named Eric Berry.
Yep.
On the defense.
Yep.
Because, I mean, he hits hard, and I mean, you know, and he run. You know, he's had, oh, God, so many interceptions and fumble recoveries and hooks. He's drawn to the ball. He's one of those type players.
I'll tell you what. This is, you know, you're home against Wyoming, though, for heaven's sakes.
I mean, oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, they should. I mean, because, like I say, their blood's boiling, so they ought to do well on that. And, you know, so we'll just wait and see on that. But it's only on pay-per-view this week.
I don't get to watch the Mounties either, I don't think.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a pity because, well, this Cincinnati game is, everyone gets a little bit more important since we screwed the season with two out-of-conference losses.
Well, our only fun part this past week was enjoying watching Georgia get their heads handed to them.
Oh, and that was. Is this your rear end? Here, let me hand it to you. Yeah, I know.
Because it didn't look like they could walk down the field, you know, one end to the other if nobody else was on the field. Oh, We did enjoy that part of it.
Oh, that was gratifying. Luke, have a great weekend.
Hey, you'll get some rain tonight, it looks like.
I do think so. And it's been pretty dry all week.
But
all right, bye now.
Enjoy.
Okay, bye. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I on again?
You're on again.
You created a monster, you know.
What have I done? Oh, no, this is not... no, I haven't. I've created a conversationalist.
Yes, you give me an outlet for my rants. Basically, I mean, I get so mad about so many things. Last night when we were talking, and I know you had to go, I had so many things. I'd been sitting there with notes on my screen here.
Yeah, that's the curse of being on hold, Dave.
I know. But all the time I was on there, I'm typing away, making notes. But I should have saved the file, and then I could have carried on, but I didn't, which was silly. But anyway, good old Mr. Obama, he's got me scared already.
Why is that?
His choices. Well, Mr. Biden scared me a while back. And then his chief of staff, who's very worrying.
Yeah, but I'm a little, to the extent that I can be comforted about it, I'm comforted.
Yeah.
He's not. Rahm Emanuel's not in a policy position.
No, but he's in a very influential position.
Agreed, but if...
He scares me.
He can be scary. I mean, if he was out there and he was going to be advising the president on, military policy, economic policy, museum opening, coffee klatch policy, yeah, he'd scare me. But what he is the enforcer for a man who is very much in charge of his own mind and knows his own mind.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine.
Yeah, so his job is going to be to go and kneecap Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi?
Well, Nancy Pelosi. I mean,
I'd like to have somebody that will go...
hear my ideas for Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, there's really no need because they're probably the same ideas I have. Retirement home, little Thorazine, you know. No, that's mean of me. I'm kidding.
Anyway, but
really, you're going to have, because Barack Obama's ideas, I don't think necessarily mesh with hers. Because while while both of them are called ultra liberals,
there's no such animal.
I don't think either of them are. But Nancy Pelosi has her front and back feet in the trough.
Mm-hmm.
And she has it with some people that you might not feel real good about. I mean, for instance, she and her husband own a significant interest in a hotel somewhere in California that they have busted their asses to keep from unionizing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was promised, and I do mean promised, was the passage of this Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah.
So if
it can be Drago, which is the issue there. I mean, I almost felt when the results were so remarkable. I was sitting here and I was watching, you know, his speech, saying, okay, you know, great, I've won stuff. And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder how many speeches you have written right now. And you've just pulled out the one for, I just kicked your backside big time,
mm-hmm.
rather than the one that was, well, I only just made it. And that's understandable to a point. But he's now, for me, the size of the win should be sending a message to him that he's got to help the little guy. Where when I see the choices he's starting to make, and I was listening to him talking about Iran tonight on the radio, it's frightening. He's saying the same kinds of things about Iran as Bush. Now, here's an interesting thought. If Iran are trying to develop a nuke, I absolutely understand why they might.
Oh, me too. If you had 200 aimed at your head, you'd want one.
Well, I have 200 aimed at my head in England, courtesy of living at the end of the longest runway in Europe.
Sure.
You know, so I know how it feels to be sitting at the wrong end of that kind of shit. Sorry, we're on the radio.
That's all right, that's all right.
You know, I absolutely, if Iran are going like mad to build one, I absolutely understand them. And it's this lie about Israel. They've had nukes, and they were basically given them. They were given 50% by the U.S. and 50% by the U.K. Nobody gave them it all in one big shot, you know, so the Americans can say, oh, we didn't give them everything. And the Brits can sit there and say, we didn't give them everything. But between them, they did.
Yeah, we all just figured, yeah, they just figured it out on their own. I know.
Do you think we may have some coordination going on here?
Sure.
You know, and Israel are the scariest bunch on the planet, for starters. They really are.
You mean...
Apartheid Mark II right now.
Yes.
With what they're doing with the Palestinians. And everyone condemns South Africa. Everyone's defending Israel. What the hell is that?
I think you know what that is.
I
think the question, in other words,
you know
I think...
You know when we shovel it.
Yeah. I think the question is semi-rhetorical, at least. South Africa didn't have the best part of its entire world population slaughtered before it engaged in its apartheid regime. There's still a lot of that the prevalent in this. And of course, but Dave, you really can't analyze this situation without analyzing the degree to which fundamentalist the
right.
so-called Christian religion plays a part.
Oh yeah, I mean, the rapture nonsense.
I mean, even the people who don't consider themselves fundamentalists get all squishy about Israel.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting thing. Yes, that millions of Jews were killed by an evil fascist so and so.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, and just to kind of. So we're talking...
Evil fascist Roman Catholic beast. There we go.
Yeah. So we're looking at 6 million dead Jews, okay? Which is, you know, I mean, just the concept of killing one person is completely beyond me, no matter what they've ever done.
Sure.
Yeah, put them in a box and let's say you're there for the rest of your life for the protection of the rest of the world. But you cannot kill somebody. You cannot. How many people have been released since DNA became... the big thing. Who, if the death penalty had been there, there'd been wouldn't have been any chance of release.
Sure.
And for me,
but
innocent man going destroys the whole thing. But there's so many other things. Look at old Georgie boy. He's responsible for a sixth of what Hitler is, really.
Yeah, and Stalin was responsible for an order of magnitude on the order of 9 times higher.
Yeah, and Mao Zedong,
Pol Pot. Yeah, no, look, there's no shortage of evil bastards, but nobody else had a book written about them, okay?
No.
When the Turks slaughtered 1 million Armenians,
yeah.
Well, the Armenians didn't have the benefit of having a book that Western civilization had adopted as their own. I mean, good God, Barbara Tuchman did a brilliant job of analyzing the love affair with the ancient mythology of the Old Testament on the part of England, Great Britain, the UK, and all of the mythologizing about, what was his name?
Jerusalem, and England's green and pleasant land.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
It's the big hymn, you know, the last night of the prom.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, here's one that you may not have heard of, and it's worth going and finding out about, is the Great Famine of Bangladesh during World War II. It's not Bangladesh, sorry, somewhere in India. God, the name escaped me. I'll have to find it.
Okay.
But the British government was responsible for more deaths in India during World War II due to their policy than Hitler was. By his policy.
But that's the difference. Yeah, that's the difference. But David, that's the difference between negligent homicide and cold-blooded murder.
No, this wasn't negligent. If you research this, it's not. It was not negligent.
But to bring it four square, the reason that Israel enjoys the position that it does. Is incredibly complex. You know, it goes well past the back before the Balfour Declaration. The Barbara Tuchman book is immensely instructive on this. It's called The Bible and Sword.
Yeah,
they're very good. I've never read anything that she wrote that I didn't just find engaging and brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a function of guilt. It's a function of millennialism. It's a function of we've got to help this bedraggled people, and it's something that was frankly handed to the world in 1948.
Yep.
And now we can complain about the origins, but it doesn't change the reality. Now, my personal comparison is not with anything current. My personal comparison is with the way I personally view it or compare it, is with the Kingdom of Jerusalem, the Kingdom of Outre-mer, that was established as a function of the Crusades. I mean, there was a Kingdom of Jerusalem, a King of Jerusalem, duchies and lordships and earls and all, you know, all that transplanted.
I used to drink in a pub that was called the Saracen's Head.
Well, there you go.
And it was it had been there since the Crusades, and that's what it was all about. Pubs were named after this kind of stuff, you know. I just find humans are evil, so and so. I think.
I mean, there are so many interesting coincidences, for linguistic coincidences and such. You know, Arabic and Hebrew both being members of the Semitic language family, which is an offspring of Nilo-Saharan, which has utterly nothing to do with Indo-European, and yet the Arabic word for scorpion is ikrab, and of course our word crab.
Yeah.
And look, you know, I was always told that the etymology of sheriff was Shire Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get a lot of sheriff until people start, running into folks who call themselves Sharif.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and all this stuff.
Lots of cross-pollination.
But this is a great thing, and so people need to realize this and say, you know what, if we all work together, we get lots more of this stuff happening, don't we? Maybe we should stop fighting each other. Now there's an idea.
Yeah, I know. I know. But and see, that's the thing. That is the thing for some people, Dave, who would be inclined to view the Palestinians in a more positive light, if they would just find it. And I'm going to get reamed for this, I'm sure. If they would just find themselves a Gandhi,
you know,
and not kill him immediately,
go down the non-violent resistance route, they'd win. They'd take away the high ground from Israel right there.
Okay, so you agree then?
Oh God, yeah, I've been saying it for years. If they could just get their act together and just sit down and have enough people, and if they'll do it, I'll go and sit there with them. Just sit there and say no.
Yeah. Go make salt.
Because that's the only chance that they've got.
Because I mean, right? Gunships. Because as it is, helicopter gunships that I help fund go and blow away apartment complexes where little crying Palestinian babies are, and there's a significant portion of the population that's not even Jewish in this country. Fundamentalist evangelical Christians who don't even believe that there's any such thing as a Palestinian.
Yeah.
Now, how are you going to get human rights, basic human rights, when people don't believe you exist? Oh, well, you're just the descendants of some wandering Arabs who got in the way.
A dead baby is a dead baby.
Well, hear, hear.
If it was yours.
Yeah.
I know how it feels.
But then, the elimination, there's that word again, the eliminationist rhetoric. I can't tell you the number of times that I've heard Flush Flimball say, my friends, the solution to the Palestinian question is for Israel to go to open war with them and kill them until they can't stand being killed anymore. No kidding.
Well, can we start with you, Rush?
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know? And last night when I was waiting, and you were talking about rights, human rights, you were talking about prop hate, as you call it, which I think is kind of nice that it came out as an hate, really, wasn't it? It's good that it wasn't 9 or 7.
Yeah, I can't buy that. Word,
you know, but what I was thinking was, when you were talking, and I just thought, if you want to take someone else's rights away, you've got to be real careful because one day they may turn around and want to take yours away. That brings it right down.
Yes, and that's why I talk about this because, one, America is not America until everybody enjoys the same rights, not the same status, not the same wealth. I don't want to set up the dictatorship of the proletariat, but everybody's got to have the same fighting shot under the legal framework that establishes this country.
Yeah. And there's things like, all this globalization nonsense. We're global because of pollution, but we don't have to be global. Well, if we're going to be honest and global, that's fine. But if we want to lie and be global, then that's a big problem.
Take it by extension, Dave. If the fundamentalist evangelicals And I think we have to take it as given. They now have the proverbial camel's nose under the tent where the law concerning marriage is concerned.
Yeah.
All right, that was redundant. And they've also got the bit in their teeth. So there is nothing to stop them now. I mean, you know, they had these ads, and, well, the traditional marriage will be endangered.
The traditional marriage is endangered more, like you were saying, from divorce than from any gay.
And by economic policy that rips marriages asunder. But what I'm getting at here is, if the Mormons and if the Roman Catholics and if the fundamentalists can work together and find common cause to deny marriage that has already been established at law for one group of people, what can they do to the next group that they turn their sights on?
Mm-hmm. And who might it be, you know? So what do they do?
Atheist marriage? Atheist marriage? Can't have those atheists breeding now, can we?
Tough, I've got two kids.
Well, and there you are making the argument. Yeah, he's got two kids.
Here's an interesting thing. I mean, all these religious types think they can go around beating on doors and saying, come on, you should believe in this, you should believe in that. Can you imagine the reaction I get if I went beating on doors saying, well, I'm an atheist, and I think you should pack into believing in God? And why, if you want to go to that extent, I mean, if their belief system gets some tax exemption, why the hell shouldn't atheism?
Well, hear, hear. And look at, you know, I joked a little bit about meeting these fundamentalists at a door with a ball bat. But you know what? If atheists went around saying, yeah, your God's stupid and we think you ought to quit believing in fairy tales, aren't you old enough yet? They would be met at doors with ball bats.
They would, absolutely. And the interesting thing is, if you just went up and just said to them, okay, show me the evidence, You'd definitely be met with a bat.
Right.
You know, the old flying spaghetti monster, I thought was brilliant. I love that.
Oh, I'm an adherent. I just am.
You know, and I mean,
the stripper, the beer volcano and the stripper factory.
Yeah,
has there ever been, who wants to sit around with a pair of wings on plucking at a lyre? Give me the beer volcano and the stripper factory.
For sure. For sure. Sounds like way more fun.
Absolutely.
I don't understand these uptight, you know, what is it about people that want to deny people enjoyment of life?
Well, in the question, you identified the problem. Life and enjoyment. We are not here to enjoy life. We are here to suffer and die.
Why?
Well, because the big, hairy, scary God in the sky said so.
When?
When he's big, old, hairy, scary guy in the sky book. That's where and when.
Well, put it up on YouTube or something. Come on. You know?
I know.
Even if you put it on YouTube, I'm still not going to go there. But, you know, it'd be a bit better than the book. I don't know if you've seen recently, about a few months ago, the oldest version of the Bible in existence was put up online. And there's about 10 books missing from the present version, based on that one.
Right.
So I wonder why those books were taken out. You know, I mean, like during the Renaissance.
Heresy! Heresy!
Basically, during the Renaissance, the papacy was bought by the bankers, so they could then change the Bible. Because previous to that, in the Bible, usurers had a special corner of hell.
And you've also got to go back to I never know how to pronounce his name, Marcion or Marcion, who was the first guy who put together something we would recognize as a Bible, and then the church declared him a heretic and started trying to kill him. But then they looked up and went, wait, this could work, and we'll say what goes into it, and then anybody else who says anything otherwise, we'll kill.
Yeah,
this is great. What a racket.
Can't beat that one. And by the way, while we're doing that, we'll say, and you're going to give us a tenth of all the effort you make for all your life. Why? Because we said so.
Because if you don't, we won't give you the magic ticket out of hell and into heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's perfect. I mean, I don't know if you ever read a book called Vatican Billion.
No.
You remember Roberto Calvi?
Yes.
When he was found dangling from a bridge in
yep.
London?
Yep.
He's a 72-year-old man. He's wearing brand new shoes. They've got no scuff marks on them. Well, this guy's put bricks and money in his pocket, taken a piece of rope, swung it up on the scaffolding, shuffled his way along, and he's got the rope just the right length so just his feet hang in the water. And when the police find him, like I say, there's no scuff marks on the bottom of his shoes, brand new shoes. And there's a load of money.
Well, you don't want to commit suicide. You don't want to commit suicide in down at heels Oxfords, okay? You just don't.
I know. But the thing was that he got a visit from Cardinal, I can't remember the guy's name now, one of the guys who was in... John Paul II was channeling cash to Lech Walesa in Poland. That's why he was shot, the starters. You know, I mean, I'm scattergun here. I know I'm all over the place.
No,
things that all tie in.
Oh, there's a beautiful book... that I've got a copy of, and I've never gotten around to having the gentleman on the show, and I really must, called Murder in the Vatican, that just covers the elimination of John Paul I.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't come away from this knowing anything but the poor old man was murdered. Because, among other things, and I didn't know until I read this, he as a bishop or cardinal or first exalted caddy to the Pope or whatever, he got himself in a big stink because he wrote one of those special documents
mm-hmm.
that called for the immediate excommunication of Mussolini and Hitler.
Yeah.
And he
all the priests in Germany were required by the Vatican to swear allegiance to Adolf Hitler?
Yes.
You know?
And only recently has Bernard Ratzinger, you know, the old German anti-aircraft gunner. Pardon?
Hitler Youth Man?
Yeah, that's him. he recently announced that he was going to drop 100,000 euros on his brother's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted to hear, oh, God, I can't remember whose mass it was, done in the Sistine Chapel. And so, yeah, 100,000 euros, no problem, and nobody's hungry in the world that day, I guess.
Well, no.
But among other things, he recently announced that, well, he was going to put on hold the further move toward beatification of Pius, you know, Hitler's Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's going to put that on hold for a little bit because the historical documents aren't ready for review.
And they can say this with a straight face.
Yeah, the Vatican, and there's smoke coming, and it ain't gray or purple or green or nothing. There's smoke coming out of the Vatican print shop.
You've got to laugh. It's the only sane reaction.
How can you know? You can't arrest the crooked old bastards.
This is why I like talking to you. You know, one of these days I'm gonna have to drive down wherever you are, and I'm gonna have to sit and have a beer.
Oh, we'll have two.
You're four.
We'll have two.
Because, I mean, everything I kind of say and everything I say, you're kind of along with, and everything you say, I'm thinking, yeah. You
well, see, and I want to make people understand. I'm not attacking people's faith. Believe what you wish.
Jam it down my throat.
Right. Don't jam it down my throat, and don't expect me to look the other way when it turns out the guy running the show is
slightly
crook.
Dubious in character.
Yeah.
Yeah,
although you got to give credit where credit is due, Dave. They're making real positive steps. They've announced that they may actually start making prospective priests go through a psychological yeah. profile battery to pre-screen the pedophiles.
Well, you know what's really is, I've got a few things to say on this subject. When I was a child, I was brought up Church of England, which is Catholic by another name.
We call it Catholic Light.
Yeah, hey, that's it, Catholic life. Good description. Now, the local reverend, I won't mention any names, was gay. Absolutely no doubt about it. I know this for a fact. And he was kind of very much into the ritual thing, and I don't think he was a very good priest. But there was another guy there, his curate, you know, his kind of sidekick,
mm-hmm.
who was probably one of the most remarkable men I've ever met. He was always honest, and if you asked him a question as a child that he didn't really want to answer, he wouldn't answer it with any kind of BS. He'd say, I don't think you're old enough and have enough knowledge of the world for me to be able to properly answer that question, which I thought was amazing. And I do that with my kids. If they ask me questions that I don't want to answer, I don't lie to them. That's my answer, too. That's one thing I learned from this guy. And he, a friend of his worked the Salvation Army, and I remember going out around the docks in Liverpool with this guy when I was 14, trying to get homeless people in because it was nasty weather, you know, in winter. That was a real eye-opener for me, too. So this guy led me down that road. Where the other guy was, yeah, it doesn't matter that he was gay. It makes no difference to me. But he was kind of into the ritual thing. Now, that's fine. My ex-mother-in-law is more Catholic than the Pope. I think she goes to church more than he does. And given that I was divorced before we got married, we've always struggled, shall we say?
Yes.
Now, she always defended the priests about all this, you know, the sexual stuff in the Catholic Church for the longest time, until she found out that a priest at her church had been interfering with boys there, and her son had been an altar boy.
Then everything changed.
Blew her brains out.
Oh, yeah, that's the NIMBY factor.
But you know what? She still goes to church every day.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Well, there, you know, ask any shrink. There are psychological addictions and there are physical addictions.
Go on.
I'm addicted to nicotine. Some people are addicted to heroin, and other people are addicted to
nicotine,
church.
But I'm a reformed nicotine addict.
Recovering. I think the word is recovering.
Okay, recovering. Yeah. Okay. Yes. I've been recovering now for actually it's 9 years this year.
Congratulations.
So I'm kind of proud of myself.
As well you should be. I mean, kicking something like, I mean, it's acknowledged. It's harder than kicking heroin.
It's hard. It really is. But, you know, with her, anyway. And it's funny because I always liked cigars. And
oh, well see, that's the funny thing. I've quit cigarettes and been able to smoke cigars and not jonesed.
I can't do it. I did it once and I was smoking again for 8 more months.
Well, that, you know, I never felt the urge to light one cigar off the last one.
Oh, no, I never felt that. But, no, as soon as I get nicotine in me, I want a pack of smoke. So
I know, they're vicious bastards, Dave. Hey, Dave, I'm going to roll along, but good hearing from you, brother.
Anyway, I'm going to drive you mad. You know that, don't you?
No, not at all. These are great conversations.
We'll do the environment another night, shall we?
I think so. We will, we'll have a run at that.
Stuff on that one.
All right.
Okay, you have a good one.
And a great weekend to you, Dave.
Good talking to you. I'll probably talk to you on the weekend.
Okay, sounds good. Pardon?
Are you on at the weekend?
No, I'm not on the weekend. I get a couple of days off.
Well, you lucky person, you. Okay, I'll leave you alone over the weekend then.
No sweat, Dave. Talk to you later.
Okay, have
Bye.
A good one.
Well, I mean, not really a day off. We load the streams on Saturdays and Sundays because, after all, it's Friday, so that means I got to remind you. We got fresh programming coming for you over the weekend. We got Rick Smith coming your way, Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. And, of course, Billy Shears and Night Sounds Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on Sunday, we've got Rama's Help Me, I'm an American. He runs on a separate network, but we promote him anyway because it's a wonderful show. And then after Rama closes, come right over to the Head on Radio Network stream at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for John Fox's All Foxed Up. And you know what? Since John's moved to a three-hour format, he is an absolute joy to listen to. Not that he wasn't in the hour format, but everything always seemed like there wasn't enough time, not enough time, not enough time, not enough time, that kind of thing. But his show in this format is just brilliant and absolutely wonderful. Oh, a little breaking news for you. From the This Just In department, mission accomplished. Shell secures 25-year access to Iraq's oil and gas. Hey! Moms, dads, brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, children, of everybody who... Oh, I can't even be a sarcastic horse's ass about that. I just can't. God, nearly 5,000 dead so Royal Dutch Shell can have a 25-year access agreement for oil and gas in Iraq. One of those moments when it would be fun to be a fundamentalist, to believe in a burning hell that would encompass the souls of the people who profit by slaughter. And I keep coming back to 10-year-old Austin Smith, who's worried about Barack Obama won't let him have a gun for Christmas this year, and him being 10 and all, and his kid brother or kid sister already able to squeeze off a few rounds at the age of 4. You can't make this stuff up. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Let's see, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Oh, hi, Bob. This is Marty.
Yeah, hey, Marty. How's it going, man?
Oh, not too bad, I guess. I'm just chilling out before I go get on the road and miss the rest of your show because I'm driving home. I'm interesting conversations you've had. Who was the previous guy?
That was Dave from Canada, from the UK by way of Canada.
Uh-huh.
Lives in Canada now, but raised in the UK.
Good conversation.
Ah, he's a great guy.
Doesn't quite make up for the absence of Andy from Wales, but.
You know, Andy's had so many, computer problems. I hope we'll hear from him again sometime soon, but I know he's just had a connectivity living hell.
Yeah. Did you get that email that I sent you with the two quotes?
Yes, I did. And it happened in the middle of the show, so I haven't been able to, you know, apply skull to the issue.
Oh.
And you may have to help.
Oh, well, I'll just tell you flat out. They're both quotes from Coretta Scott King.
Okay. They're beautiful.
So in other words, the wife of Martin Luther King was a supporter of gay rights.
How could she not be?
I believe she would agree with you. I mean,
But isn't it one of Martin's daughters who is trotted out by the fundies every so often as a vocal opponent of same-sex marriage rights? And I don't even call them same-sex marriage rights anymore, Marty. They're marriage rights.
Well, that's just it. I mean, as you have explained the history of what marriage was in the past and all, and I just remember somebody calling Tom Hartman yesterday, saying they're from North Hollywood, which I can't remember if that or West Hollywood was supposed to be the so-called gay area.
That's West.
All right, thanks for the education. Or for reminding me. And he's going, if we're going to redefine marriage to be two men or two women, what about polygamy? And I just remember wanting to get up on the phone. Of course, I'm at work, and so I don't like to do that. And call and say, you know, if he's so upset about what the definition of marriage is, maybe we should simply eliminate the word marriage.
Hear, hear. Or let it be something that, let marriage be something that the churches take care of or religious authorities of any sort, and find another word to call the reality of what happens within the civil structure of our country.
Exactly. I mean, of course, you played the clip from Wanda Sykes from the Ellen Halloween show. I thought that was great. I went right out to YouTube, found it, and downloaded it. I know my sisters voted for it, and most of my family in Southern California voted for it, and. The thing is, both my brothers-in-law, both my sisters are intermarried, black women who have married white men.
Okay.
And I know that they're gonna fight me on it when I remind them that there was a time when the two of them, or the four of them, would not have been able to get married.
Well, not only was there a time, Marty, but
It
wasn't that long ago, A, and B, California tried to engage in retrograde motion on it. California made the same arguments that are being made now with regard to marriage rights for same-sex couples, and they were flatly rejected. Mark Levine did a beautiful job of covering all this, and I can't remember what he titled the show, but if you go back, a ways, it would be right around the time when Proposition Hate was first proposed and when the court ruling came down. If you go back and look in his archives, I highly recommend listening to that show because, he ties it all into the Loving versus Virginia case, which was the interracial marriage case that eventually got interracial marriage bans struck down nationwide. And then he goes into extreme detail because Mark is a licensed lawyer in the state of California.
Yeah.
And he knows of which he speaks. I wanted to share one thing with you, Marty, that I think you might find rather profound. And that is an email that I got from Mark Levine today because we just, it's a little fraternity here, and we sort of blather back and forth at each other about these issues.
Oh, man.
And he sent me a letter to the editor. And what this letter to the editor says, and it is, by golly, brilliant. It says, it's a letter to the editor, and I assume it's from the Washington Post. It may not be. But the writer of the letter says, I was ecstatic when Barack Obama won. I cried watching African Americans cry with joy. I seethed as the ban on gay marriage slowly passed. I've been trying to focus on the positive, but it's been an emotional roller coaster. My feelings finally crystallized today when I read this exit poll statistic. 70% of African American voters, once victims of constitutional discrimination themselves, voted to add discrimination to the California Constitution. Want to know how I feel about this election?
Three-fifths happy. I read that in the SF from the
Okay, family. Okay, so maybe it was in the Chronicle then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to know how I feel about this election? I'm happy. Three-fifths happy. And that just crystallized it for me, Marty.
Oh, the letter writer was absolutely right. I mean, I thought that was just absolutely brilliant. I agree. It's just really upsetting to allow the out of state money and all the lies that they told. I mean, this whole process.
I've seen some criticism, however. And because I wasn't there, didn't see the campaign ads, all of that, I don't feel entirely qualified to comment. But I've seen some criticism saying that the No on 8 campaign was not handled well.
I believe Mark Levine said that, and he's right. It wasn't. I never really saw.
Well, I mean, I saw it over at Daily Coast and a couple of other places, too.
But I never saw it in the mass media. Of course, I don't always go to the quote unquote mass mainstream for profit media, but I saw signs, and amusingly enough, on election night before the polls closed, I saw somebody tearing down a couple of No on 8 signs, but I can't say whether or not that was on their land or not. If it was on land, they didn't know, and they tore it down. I mean, they broke the law, but I didn't have my camera available in handy at the time to take their picture and say, okay, this person's broken the law. But there was one interesting thing. I don't know if you heard about it, if Sandra sent it to you or somebody. I forgot to send it to you. There was a rally last week or weekend before where one of these idiots who was really pushing the Yes on 8 thing was likening the passage of 8 defeating the Nazis.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. In fact, I played that audio on the show.
Oh, I missed that audio.
Yeah, he was. I think he was protesting or holding some outdoor protest or something.
It was in front of the state capitol.
Yeah, it was in Sacramento there. When you said loony and rally, I thought you were going to reference the humongous Nuremberg rally at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. And there's video of that over at Alternet. The Max Blumenthal article. There's video embedded with that, and I mean, you know, you just look at the people who went and just, holy Moses, just astonishing levels of ignorance and hate. And the thing, but the thing is, it's not, and I don't, Marty, absent me sitting here and screaming and frothing at the mouth and the spraying the monitor with spit and everything, I don't know how to get across the fact that, and I don't mean to demean or diminish in any wise the pain and the anguish of those affected by this immediate plebiscite, if indeed they are, based on however the California Supreme Court rules, I don't know how to get across that this wasn't solely about gay marriage. Because you've got to, and maybe it's because, and please just bear with me, maybe it's because I watch these people so closely, and I do, in fact, know rather intimately how they work and how they think and how they operate. A few years ago, you started hearing, for instance, this theme running through the so-called pro-life crowd about how the fight had to be taken to the states.
Yeah.
Because what they want to do, what they were planning on doing, was being ready so that they could mount a 50-state attack on abortion if, by some miracle, the Supreme Court would strike down Roe v. Wade and send it back and make it a state-by-state issue. Then they wanted to be ready to mount attacks in every state to destroy a woman's right to choose in each and every state in the union. And I got to tell you, that organization is built and ready to go when the moment comes, if it comes.
Personally, I think it will, and if it does, then I don't.
But the point,
I have a family at the time. I go immediately go to Canada and then go find someplace else. I mean, it's.
But the point is that same machine is in place with regard to this issue and any other social issue where these theocrats want to exert dominion over what should otherwise be purely civil governmental concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you had here. I mean, remember, we're talking about the Mormon Church, all right? The Mormon Church baptizes people after they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's how weird they are. They will make you a Mormon in absentia or ex vitae or whatever you want to call it, whatever the Latin phrase is for it. They'll baptize you after you're dead.
Yes.
And you don't have any say-so in it, and boom, you just got your own planet. It boggles my mind. That's why they're so obsessed with genealogy. They baptize people that have been dead for 200 years who weren't Mormons, and they make them Mormons after the fact. So anybody that would do that and would do this to control marriage has a literal philosophical view that says they're going to run the show. And in fact, their religious documentation tells them that they must run the show.
That was something that Hartman again had postulated earlier today. That because he was kind of wondering about the question, he was pondering the question: who the heck leaked all this negative stuff about Sarah Palin, thereby making Sarah Palin look really uninformed and idiotic in time to help McCain lose? And to me, and not only that, to really make her seem unpalatable even to, we'll say, certain segments of the religious right,
sure,
the Republican Party. And it was supposed that, and it was presumed that part of it would be, And it ties in with the Mormon, with the Mormons and all that. And I presume you've read the thing on the Daily Kos about the memo.
Yeah, the 11-year-old memo.
Detailing the meeting between the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church in California to set up an alliance between those two religious, you know, members of the religious industrial complex.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to call it that. And to set up not Palin in 2012, but Romney in 2012 and make a Mormon palatable to the religious right.
Okay, Marty, you've just done a wonderful job of opening a door here, and I'm going to say some things, and I don't self-censor a lot here. The right wing talks a lot about Islamo-fascism.
Yeah.
Well, if you study, if you study the rise of the formation of Mormonism, what you find in Joseph Smith was a guy who had, he was a sort of itinerant huckster.
Mm-hmm.
And he made stuff up.
Yes.
But if you look at the structure and everything within the Mormon Church, what you've got is a rewrite of Islam. I'm not kidding. It really, really is. I mean, at the end,
you know, research now.
There's Muhammad. He says, "I'm the seal of the prophets," right?
Right.
Well, here comes Joseph Smith. What's Joseph Smith say? "I'm the seal of the prophets." He posits a religion that is prophet based, not Savior-based, like Christianity, but prophet-based, like Islam. And there are more similarities between Islam and Mormonism than there are between Mormonism and Christianity.
Hence the need for an alliance of convenience.
Right. And I don't want anybody thinking this is a slur on Islam. It's not. What Joseph Smith did is he plagiarized the tenets of Islam and made them sort of semi-palatable to some otherwise gullible people in upstate New York. And then he has to go on his own flight. Because after all, they buried the tablets in upstate New York. Upstate New York is the Holy Land. He has to go on his flight, just as Muhammad fled from Mecca to Medina. He flees from New York to Illinois to Missouri to, how about that, a desert place.
Utah.
It's yeah. Really weird.
Yeah, I hear you.
And so, of course, the right-wingers have all these fits about Sharia law, for instance.
Yes.
Well,
they're trying to implement their own version of Sharia law. I mean,
Mormonism has its own Sharia law. The temple ceremonies and, all the creepy stuff and the polygamy. Polygamy? Polygamy?
Multiple wives. Yeah.
How many, if Mormonism is a Christian sect, where did they get the Christian concept of polygamy?
Well, there was, Jim McDermott was reading this about marriage. I can't remember where I printed it.
But you've got to really...
I understand what you mean.
You got to dig around to find polygamous Christianity. But you don't have to dig at all to find polygamous Islam.
In Islam, yeah.
I mean, it's right there, four wives. I will never forget till the day I die the cab driver that Wayne and I had in Washington, D.C. He was a Sikh. And him looking at me and saying, "I do not understand them. Most of the time, one wife is all I can handle. And sometimes I wish I did not have her." And they want four? And
variety.
Yeah, I guess that's the word for it. But do some digging around on it. I think you'll really, really be profoundly impacted, because what you've got here is Joseph Smith understood that America was predominantly at that time Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And he also understood that there was really nothing new to be had in founding a new sect. Everybody and their cousin had a new Christian sect.
Yes.
But what if he took something totally alien that nobody was familiar with? I mean, Thomas Jefferson had a copy of the Quran, but not many other people did.
Right.
What if he took something completely alien and merged it into some level of sort of pop psychology, Christianism for the time? You know, this is also the same time in American history, Marty, when people are running around declaring that the Indian mounds are remnants of the lost tribes of Israel. No kidding. I mean, lots of serious scholarship on it. And so that gets incorporated, and suddenly every Indian is a secret Jew.
Well, that makes their slaughter really interesting, like the Holocaust.
Yeah. So it's
it's just
astonishing. And I remember the South Park episode where I forget if it's Cartman or Stan or whoever sings dum 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 dum. Yeah, when he's they've got the animated Joseph Smith putting on the magic reading glasses and the stones and all of the weird stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's an amazing fraud. And, I mean, they even found, you know, I don't know if you remember, but a few years back, they found the letter where Joseph Smith admitted, you know, this is a fraud.
Fraud.
Right. And they presented it to, the high 33rd degree noble exalted prophet. And he said, I'm a prophet. I declare this not to matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, and of course that figures.
And it's over.
If it mattered that they would, that they would lose all their power, most importantly, their money.
Right. And, the reason the little dudes go out on the bicycles all over creation is because they are under a mandate to make the whole world Mormon.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's going to be hard to make the whole world Mormon if there's same-sex marriage. This is more convoluted than most people, I think, realize. Not that I'm some sort of sage. I'm not. But it's got tentacles and it's got little ingrowths and outgrowths to it that are really, really creepy. And
no, but you go on.
And I wish straight married people would understand, or straight unmarried people would understand, that this proposition has the world and all to do with their futures as well. Because once you can declare one kind of marriage invalid, the next thing you know, oh, maybe it's blue-eyed people and brown-eyed people.
Exactly.
Or maybe it's Asians and whites. Or
just say interracial.
Well,
but they will do it piece by piece. They won't try to do it as a whole. That way.
Oh no! It's never going to come in an avalanche, Marty. It will be incremental. Yes. And these people are masters of incrementalism. So, you know, I pray the Supreme Court looks at this and goes, you know, you can't do this to a Constitution. You can't amend the Constitution by a bare majority vote.
Which Supreme Court are you talking about?
Yours.
California?
Yeah, yours.
Oh, you know, like I was going to say, in an honest federal judiciary, the thing wouldn't have gotten that far, because they just would have been told it's a violation of the 14th Amendment, and that would hopefully be the end of it. And I think, and of course the problem is the California Supreme Court, the members come up for re-election every so often, and so I can just imagine the hue and cry when a few of the people who voted to overturn the original same-sex marriage ban.
Right.
That produced this. When they did that, they put their heads in a noose. And if they do it again, they may find their heads chopped off as well, figuratively, naturally.
I don't think you're engaging in any kind of hyperbole myself. But this is astonishingly ill-informed, and frankly, I hope the Mormon Church loses its tax-exempt status. And of course, we got to be prepared, though, Marty, because the thing that'll come after that, oh, they're persecuting us in the name of Jesus.
Mm.
No, they're persecuting you because you're a tax cheat, and it's prosecuting, not persecuting.
Oh, I like what you said about them last night when you called the whole scheme of funding the Yes on It campaign as money laundering. I mean, that's what it is.
Sure.
And Tom was reading a few other letters that I don't remember from people about the whole thing with the Mormon Church's involvement in the Yes on 8 campaign, and one person was saying, yeah, if you voiced any opposition to it, they put pressure on you and they threaten you with excommunication. Personally, if it were me and they threatened me with excommunication, I'd say goodbye. But I guess you either have to be really, really disillusioned or really, really be a strong person to turn away from one's quote-unquote faith.
Well, but where Mormonism is concerned, those are deliberately isolated communities. So that, I mean, it's like the Amish. If you get excommunicated from the Amish, and it does happen,
you're shunned.
You're shunned, and you are utterly cut off from your entire social support structure. The same thing happens in the Mormon church. I mean, your friends, your loved ones, everybody, bye-bye. And you're alone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terrifying for the average human being. It's terrifying for an extraordinary human being.
True.
So I love these quotes, though, and they bear reading. Homophobia is like racism and anti-Semitism and other forms of bigotry in that it seeks to dehumanize a large group of people to deny their humanity, their dignity, and personhood. This sets the stage for further repression and violence that spread all too easily to victimize the next minority group. How much clearer does it have to be?
Not much, but the thing to remember also is that the black clergy really they were really criticizing her about making those comments, but she understood the message of her husband. As the other quote said, I mean, if there's injustice for anyone, it's injustice for everyone.
Yes.
And the funny thing about it, I couldn't convince enough people of that. Some members of my family were on board with that. Some weren't.
But anytime you catch one who isn't, if you'll sort of drill down, as it were, you will find that sooner or later they make a religious argument.
And the person referring to is my aunt and the two sisters that I refer to. That is what they will do. They will.
You don't have to get there. They start there.
Oh, they'll start there.
Well, that's the point, Marty, where you look at them and say, then you're making a religious argument. And what you're doing is, in essence, you're forcing your beliefs on somebody else and you're violating that person's First Amendment rights.
And they don't have an issue with it. That's the thing.
But then you can win by pointing out the fact that when you force your religious beliefs on somebody else, that's unconstitutional.
And
they don't care.
We tried it. I tried it. They didn't. My uncle tried it with my aunt. My father, who was in town at the time, we tried it as well. She wasn't buying it. She was saying the lie that they would teach the thing about same-sex marriage in school. And the only thing I could think of, and the only kind of thing I could think of that they would actually teach the thing, or the gay lifestyle, would be to say, you are free to be whoever you are, whatever you are. I mean, even for as religious as these people claim to be, they forget that tenet about God loving and accepting us, whoever we are, whatever we are.
Nah, they got the secret fundamentalist decoder ring. Except the gays. You know, that's how that works.
For now, it's accept the gays. Tomorrow, it will be accept blank. And
the Jews, the Muslims, the Sikhs, the bus drivers, the Asians, right.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, it turns back and then we find ourselves in a Pastor Niemöller situation.
Exactly, Marty. And, you know, the thing that just drives me batty out of all this is it seems so easy to comprehend, and yet, I mean, they don't. I mean, for heaven's sakes, there are young Jewish people buried in an earthen dam in Mississippi. They had nothing in that fight. But they came to Mississippi to fight for civil rights. And they got killed by the Klan.
Yes.
So the alliance is what has to happen. There has to be a gay-straight alliance. There has to be a cross-ethnic alliance. And frankly,
Well, I think I'll give you solace in this though. In that demographic breakdown, young people, more young people, way more young people voted against Prop 8
than voted for it.
Than voted much more, over 60%. The problem was the next age group of which I was in was more split 50-50, and then the oldest groups, those were the mirror, the opposite of the young people group. So as they start dying off, the more young people come in and start understanding about and start realizing, hopefully they're thinking that this is unjust. It'll be over. I mean, one way or another, it's going to be overturned, but it should not have gotten this far in the first place. And then one amusing thing is, I'll point this out, then I'll let you go. They keep arguing, the supporters who are gloating, keep arguing, it's like, well, we just voted on the thing, we've passed it, not by very much, why are you going to court to violate the will of the people? And my reply was, well, they keep trying to get teenage notification before abortion passed as well.
Third time in four years that they've had that thing up.
And it keeps getting voted down. When is that going to stop?
And that's the failure in the ballot initiative process.
You can keep, as long as you can get a bunch of idiots or those who feel they need to have control or whatever, or prevent their daughters from aborting the incestuous baby or whatever. You can't control them. They're just going to keep on.
It comes back. And, you know, how much does this cost the taxpayers of the state of California?
Oh, boy.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. And then you have the people putting up the signs and whatever, and you know, it's just really bad. But one thing that I think needs to be done after this is overturned is that we've got to put in a thing. If you're gonna try to amend the Constitution, you need a 2/3 majority.
You can't amend the Constitution.
Got to go.
You can't amend the Constitution by self-inflicted ballot initiative.
That one won't go. Supermajority probably will, but I agree. I mean,
I love the ballot initiative that was passed just barely about the nation's first rapid rail service between L.A. and Frisco. God, that was just exciting. But the humane one about how animals get treated, I'm down with that too.
We're giving more rights to animals and giving less to homosexuals.
Don't think the irony was lost on me.
It wasn't lost on you, and it wasn't lost on a whole bunch of other people as well. I mean, ask Sandra about this next time she calls, which I look forward to.
I will. Marty, I'm glad you called in, man. We don't talk very often. This is wonderful.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, like I said, it's just that thing. I mean, I'm usually doing other things and whatever. And of course, I really don't like calling from work during the work day. It's just after 5.
No.
So
yeah, I got it.
You know that thing about trying to be ethical.
Yeah,
you've never seen my name on a ballot because of that. Anyway,
all right.
That's everyone in the chat room.
And drive safely going home, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, you too.
All right, take care, Marty.
You too. Good night.
Bye now. And let's see, Michael, get your cans on. Oh, you got your cans on.
Yeah.
I figured I'd share. We got a few minutes left, and we've had some great calls tonight, by the way. But Michael, otherwise known as Kid A from the chat room, is in studio with us. He and Jen have been with us since Election Day, shooting some footage, and just because they're videographers. And we've been having a high old time. You know what I mean. Stop that. They've been able to see some of what we talk about when we talk about mountaintop removal. And I just wanted to have Michael on for a minute or two before we close the program for the evening. A, thank you for everything you've done, you and Jen. I don't have the third microphone hotted up. Otherwise, she moved again. Otherwise, Jen, you'd have a microphone too. Or, you know, young swap here in a couple of minutes. But well, welcome and thank you. And what do you think?
Is this thing on?
Oh, no, that thing's not on. Wrong button. Now it's on.
Now is this thing on?
Now that thing's on.
All right, we're good. Okay, so what were you asking?
Well, just, you know, what do you think? I mean, what's... you've seen the nerve center. You've seen the mansion.
Yep, we've been hanging out here in the Horn Cave for the last couple of days. It's been quite an adventure. I can try to summarize it a little bit. It might be interesting to folks. Jen, my partner, and I, we've been here since election night. We, without giving the location, the top secret undisclosed location of the Horn Cave, let me just say that Google and MapQuest have no idea where it is.
And, you know, it takes some doing to do that, Michael.
Yeah, so...
I mean, you know, Dick Cheney had to gray himself out.
Yeah, I don't know how you did it, but it's definite. It's like you have, like, a Romulan cloaking device around the house. It's hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, and if you go to the actual address on the Google Maps or MapQuest or whatever... You actually wind up so far up a holler, there's a kid with, like, a banjo. You know, ding, 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 ding. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, so we were lost in this, you know, like, Dungeons and Dragons-type maze for about an hour and a half, and I'm screaming to Jen, oh, my God, they're going to call the election for Obama, and we're not even going to be there. We're going to be stuck in the hinterlands. But no, we got here about, 7:30, 8
yeah,
o'clock
it was about
on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then... And you put us to work. You were doing program till about 4 a.m. that morning.
That was brutal.
Yeah.
I've never done anything like that before in my life. But if you're going to do that, that's the night to do it.
Yeah, and we were here. We were here right till the end. And
yeah, what did you call it? A 9-hour video?
Well, what I was saying is it will be selectively edited.
I hope so.
I don't know that anyone's going to want to watch just a 9-hour video dump of. You know, Bob sitting behind the chair, but no offense. But
No, but believe me, I get it because we keep talking about going to, you know, live streaming video and stuff, and I don't understand the fascination with watching a guy who's not doing anything but running his yap.
Right, right. Yeah, I didn't want you to, when I said 9-hour video dump, I didn't want you to take offense to that.
I'm not offended.
Okay, because I remember when I was a
there
kid.
Are shows, there are nights when this is a 3-hour video, the 3-hour audio dump, so, you know.
I wouldn't say that, but I remember when I was younger, I was big into Metallica, and there was this box set that came out of live material, and it said something like, over 8 hours of live Metallica, and I'm like, I like Metallica, but over 8 hours, is that a treat, or is that torment?
Yeah.
I don't know that I could take that much of anything, but Tuesday night, that was cool, and then our car broke down, radiator hose busted. On the way back, election night, morning, whatever, on the way to the hotel. And so that was fun. And then so we were late. Car had to get repaired. We had to go, you know, God knows where to get it back the next day. So we were a few minutes late the next day, but we shot Wednesday's show. And then we were supposed to get back last night for Thursday's show, but we ended up. It was going to be just a couple hours at CRMW, Coal River Mountain Watch, their headquarters out in Whitesville.
Yeah.
Right? And it was supposed to be just a couple hours, but it ended up being an all-day thing.
When you go there, it never works out that way. You think, you know, it's a three-hour tour, and the next thing, the weather started getting rough and the tiny ship was off.
Yeah, those folks are really cool. And we got some interviews. We got some interviews with Rory, who he called the show last night.
Yeah,
didn't
we talked to Rory last night.
Yeah, we were stuck on the road trying to get back to civilization at the time, but he said he was going to call in. But yeah, we filmed an interview with Rory, and we filmed about an hour with Nick Regalado.
Yeah,
he's been on the show, and then Nick and Benji took Jen and I up to Kayford, and. We had been to Kayford in July for the Mountain Keepers Festival, which I highly recommend. The music was awesome. That was the weekend of Independence Day.
Right.
I think they do it every year. I'd highly recommend anybody who likes good music check that out next year. But
and what a setting, huh?
Yeah, oh, it's just beautiful. But so anyway, we had seen Mountaintop Removal before, back in July, but it was from a different vantage point than we got to see yesterday. Yesterday, because in July, this place called Hell's Gate was closed. Yesterday, how are we doing on time?
Oh, you're fine.
Okay.
You're fine.
Yesterday, Nick and Benji drove us up to Hell's Gate. And I know you often call Mountaintop Removal Moonscape, and, you know, I get that. In my mind, though, I always think of the moon as, like, you know, this romantic kind of idea. Even though it's desolate, like, someday we'll have cities there and colonize it. But I get
yes,
why...
Yes, Mr. Spock.
Yeah,
yes.
I get why you call it a moonscape. But, honestly, the name Hell's Gate couldn't be more appropriate. We were just speechless. It looks... When we got up there, it's at least...
It encompasses the breadth of your vision, doesn't it?
At least like 250 degrees of just absolute devastation. It looks like the end of the world up there. It's frightening. And the reason I said Hell's Gate is an appropriate name, if you could take a panoramic picture of it, just tint the whole thing red, and then throw in a bunch of CGI demons and flames. It would look like something out of Spawn or something. It looks exactly what you would think hell would look like.
It's so desolate and so barren and so stark and really sterile. Honest to God, you know, you see these little rovers that NASA sends up to Mars, and they get really excited if they find one little protein molecule that might someday turn into a thing that's alive. On this... You can't find that protein molecule. Maybe it's a Marscape. I don't know.
No, yeah. And the thing that really struck me, and we got about 2 hours of footage up on Kayford, probably more. I'm shaking right now, not because I'm nervous being on the radio, just because I'm nervous thinking about this. We got, you know, more video up there than I think anyone could ever stand to watch. But up there you have the trifecta. You have, in the background on the horizon, you have just absolutely gorgeous all the ridges of Coal River Mountain, which is going to be next if it's not stopped. And then, you know, everything, you know, forward of the horizon is just complete devastation.
Death.
And then you got this little patch, you know, like I said, it's the whole turn to the left, turn to the right, the whole thing. It's just a giant pit. We saw, you know, we saw a lot of dumping, and we saw what looked like some detonators and some drills, and we waited till it was pretty dark. We waited to see if we could catch a blast on tape, but they didn't do one yesterday, at least not while we were there, not the 2 hours we were there. But like I said, it's the trifecta, because you have the beauty of Coal River Mountain Coal River Mountain on the horizon. Everything in front of that is just total devastation, and then if you turn to your right, you have this little spot, this little hill, and then this big slope downward from it, and it's either the world's largest chia pet, or it is what it is, which is the reclamation site. And it just, like I said, it looks like a chia pet. It looks pathetic. I mean, you can see Coal River, Coal River Mountain, and you know, it's just lush, beautiful with all, you know, all sorts of species of trees and whatnot. And here you got this, Nick was explaining, I forget the name of it, but it's some sort of non-native grass that you could spray on a concrete block and it would grow.
Literally.
Like a chia pet. And it's just all this rubble, and you can see all these streaks of rock.
Oh, you couldn't sink a plow in that stuff and draw a furrow with Babe the Big Blue Ox.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be what reclamation is, and it's...
We're going to build an airport or a putt-putt golf course. Yeah, yes. We're reclaiming. I know.
It's a joke. It's almost just an insult. and you know, what Nick described it as just camouflage. And I don't know. Got any questions? I'm overwhelmed just thinking about it.
Well, and then that's, I've never seen anybody who sees that for the first time who isn't. And I was. And imagine, just by way of extension, they want to make that the stream buffer zone rule, that interpretation allows them to throw their waste into streams and fill up valleys. One of the last nasty acts of the Bush administration is they're desperately trying to get that stream buffer zone rule change made permanent. And if that happens, you can write southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, southwestern Virginia, parts of East Tennessee. Just write them off. It's over. It's done. And they will have accomplished their goal, because ultimately everybody who lives here will be depopulated. It'll be one big pit that can't support human life. Well, Michael, I just want to say to you and to Jen, yell hello, Jen.
Hey, this is Jen. Hi, guys.
See, it really is Jen. I want to thank you both for doing this all week. I know you went and talked to the boss man.
Yeah, we talked to Wayne.
We're going to do some more stuff tomorrow, which will be cool. I want to thank you both for being here and putting up with us. It's a challenge and it's a joy, but you get a little bit of an idea of what we're up against.
Yeah, well, I'd like to just thank you and Agnes and your whole family for the hospitality and excellent hummus tonight, Bob. And
food porn.
I don't know if you're a fan, but Jen and I really liked Agnes's pumpkin soup, pumpkin coconut soup. Yes, from a couple days ago. But you guys have been great to us, and
it's been fun.
And hopefully we'll try to get some footage either to Nick at Coal River Mountain or somehow on the web or both of what we saw yesterday. But other than that, hopefully this is the beginning of something bigger. We're trying to get started on a documentary on the Horn and the folks and the issues related to the Horn. So this is just the beginning.
And it's a very exciting beginning. And I love watching you guys work. It's an absolute blast to me, because the art that goes in on the technical end is the stuff you have to think about before you ever start shooting just blows my tiny mind. So thank you both very much, and thank all of you for joining us tonight. That's the end of the week. Like I said, remember the weekend programming, Rick Goodner, Rick Smith, Billy Shears, Rama, and then finally John Fox with the Sunday night version of All Foxed Up at 9 p.m. Eastern Time live. And have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you, of course, to John and to Peter and to Ben. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And having been down there now, Michael, you know why I say that now, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And most of all, thank you to you who listen, who participate, who email, who call, chat room, and who make it financially possible for this to continue. We sincerely appreciate it, and frankly, we wouldn't happen without it. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.